But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
The Federal Reserve meets today, with most analysts predicting that the Fed will make no change in interest rates, which are currently at 5.25%. Boeing has been awarded a $2 billion federal contract to build high-tech equipment to help combat illegal immigration along the U.S.-Mexican border. Former U.S. Senator Sam Nunn is joined with billionaires Warren Buffett and Ted Turner, all of them combining to pledge $50 million to help the U.N. develop a uranium stockpile to be used by countries who need it to build nuclear power plants, thus discouraging them from developing their own uranium enrichment facilities. The French press reports that Airbus is expected to announce a six-month delay in the delivery of the A380, its new super jumbo jet. Singapore is one of several airlines that had been expecting delivery before the end of the year. The space shuttle Atlantis has been cleared to return to Earth tomorrow morning at 6:21 Eastern time. NASA is satisfied that despite the fact that several mysterious objects have been seen floating near the spacecraft, there's been no damage to the heat shield. Gold is trading at this hour at $590.40 an ounce. Silver is $11.21 an ounce, up 26 cents. Light sweet crude down 41 cents a barrel, trading at $61.25. On Wall Street, all the markets are higher. The Dow is up 59 points at 11,599. NASDAQ is up 30 at 2,252. And the S&P 500 is higher by 8, trading this hour at 1,325. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Diana Walter. It's 5 past the hour.
Insurance.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. It's a special 3 hours of the Inside Scoop today. Guy James is off, and his show follows mine, of course, on the Head On Radio Network, and he's asked me to fill in for the 2 hours after my show, and I'm happy to do so because it's a really important topic we have today. Some would argue it's a question over a battle for the soul of America, the question of whether or not the United States should be a nation that tortures people in secret prisons, holds them indefinitely without evidence and without showing the person the evidence to see if it's false, and argues that we need this. We have to do this, even if it means sacrificing American values, to fight the war on terror. And I think it's important to give the devil their due. There, after all, 3,000 Americans were killed. So I want to talk about a success story for the Bush administration, one that they'd be proud of, one where someone who was tortured without going through the gamut of American civil liberties indeed blurted out that he was an Al-Qaeda operative. This is a man who was seen by Canadian intelligence talking with two people that they believed had Al-Qaeda ties. And he was at the airport about to go to Tunisia, changing planes at John F. Kennedy Airport in New York City. The Canadian police, being the kind of ally that Canada is and wanting to alert the United States to anyone who could pose a danger to U.S. citizens, put him on the American watch list for potential terrorists. The man came to JFK Airport in New York, was going to change planes to go to Tunisia, and was stopped by U.S. agents. Now, liberals would argue that he should have gotten a hearing, or they should have been able to present evidence against him. They shouldn't hold him without trial, or at least the arrest warrant that you get upon probable cause, which you show to a judge. But the Bush administration knew better. They knew that if you delay things by giving someone due process, that maybe this man would have information that could stop a ticking time bomb and save American lives. There was no time for due process. There was no time to check out the evidence. There was no time to go before a judge. And yet they knew that if they wanted to torture the man to find out what information he had, it was going to be difficult to do in the United States of America. After all, our Constitution, the Eighth Amendment in the Bill of Rights, prohibits cruel and unusual punishment even to those who've been convicted of a crime, those that have been found guilty. We can't even take, if we convicted Osama bin Laden, we could kill him, according to the United States Supreme Court standards under the death penalty, which, by the way, I personally am not opposed to. But we couldn't torture him. We couldn't stick bamboo shoots under his fingernails, put him in fire, and so forth, because there's an amendment to our Constitution, the Eighth Amendment. So if we couldn't torture someone who's been convicted of a crime, according to our Constitution and our Bill of Rights, surely we can't torture someone who is suspected of a crime. And in this case, we had a man who they couldn't even get a warrant from a judge to show probable cause had done anything wrong. So they certainly weren't going to get permission to detain him in the United States, much less to torture him, which is what the administration felt needed to be done. The CIA felt it needed to be done. So we sent him to that great ally of ours, Syria. Syria, of course, is run by a dictator, Assad, who is every bit as ruthless as Saddam Hussein was prior to our deposing him. In fact, he's a lot worse. His prisons are worse. His torture is worse. His clamp on Syria is stronger than Iraq's was. And you would think that we would be opposed to this kind of dictator who runs a minority government. It's the Alawite sect. He's a Shiite ruler ruling a Sunni government. And he, like I said, keeps a very strong clamp on no freedom of speech. You'd think we'd be against this guy. But Assad was willing to do our dirty work. You see, we sort of made a deal with Assad. We won't bother you when you support Hezbollah in Lebanon, when you actually arm the group, the terrorist group in Lebanon that attacked Israel without any reason just a few months ago. We won't care that, in fact, you are secretly trying to control Lebanon. We won't care how you're mistreating your own people because you will do our dirty work. Hey, you know, sacrifices have to be made, and Assad would do it. So we send this Canadian citizen, who actually was born in Syria but left at the age of 17 and was now 36 years old and had lived a life in Canada as a computer engineer, who, after all, Canadian intelligence told us might be an al-Qaeda operative because he talked with two members of the Montreal Muslim community in the airport prior to leaving on the flight. We stopped him. We got the better of him. We sent him to Syria. And, you know, of course, the CIA agents, clothed in black, you know, these aren't normal police officers who have to go by normal police regulations. We sent him to Syria, and he was tortured. And, oh, was he tortured. He was beaten repeatedly by electric cables. He was placed in a cell that I think George Bush would say is not torture, because it didn't involve beating. The cell, in fact, was 7 feet high. He could stand up perfectly in the cell. It was 3 feet wide and 3 feet deep, so he could only stand up. He couldn't lay down. Whether he's 5'6" or 6 feet tall, you can't lay down in a cell that's 3 feet wide and 3 feet deep. So he must have done a lot of leaning. I don't want to think about where he went to the bathroom. But Bush says this isn't torture, and you know what? By beating him and by putting him in the cell, we got the confession we need. George Bush would say this is a success story. We got the confession he need. He admitted after being beaten that, I mean, he's before being beaten, he denied having ever any connections with al-Qaeda. But after being repeatedly beaten, repeatedly placed in this cell where he has to stand up bruised and bloodied and can't lie down, he admitted that, in fact, he had trained with al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. He tried, indeed, to finger other people. Unfortunately, none of those leads checked out. So, hey, you know, he must be lying to us. But after 10 months, they couldn't get anything more out of him, no matter how hard they beat him, and they let him go. And he returned bruised and bloodied to Canada, where he told Canadian authorities that everything he had said under torture was not true, that he, in fact, had never been to Afghanistan, that he had no connections with al-Qaeda. He sued the United States, saying, in effect, U.S., you sent me to the place to be tortured. You should have some reason for doing so. What are your reasons? The federal judge, a Bush appointee, looked at the case and said, you know, Maher Arar, your case may have some merit, but for issues of national security, I'm not even going to look at your case. It doesn't matter whether you are innocent or guilty. Because of national security, we have a right to torture the innocent. We have a right to pick you up, even when you're not an American citizen, and throw you in a camp and be tortured without any evidence. That is our right. We need that to fight against terrorists. It doesn't matter whether you're innocent or guilty. We're going to dismiss your lawsuit because the president told me to, and after all, he appointed me. Similar cases have dismissed, you may be aware of the case of Sybil Edmonds, who discovered spies in the FBI, and she went and she sued after she was fired for telling the truth about these spies. And the judge said, well, Sybil, you may have a claim, but we're not going to look at it. National security. So American courts were closed. But luckily for Maher Arar, he was a citizen of a civilized country. He was a citizen of a country that valued due process. He was a citizen of a country that recognized human rights. He was a citizen of Canada. And a Canadian inquiry, after 2.5 years of painstakingly looking at evidence, filed an 844-page report just a week ago, showing, in fact, that Maher Arar was completely innocent. He'd done nothing wrong. Nothing whatsoever. He'd been tortured by mistake. Oops. The Canadian government asked the U.S. government to participate in the inquiry, to find out what information we had. The United States refused. After all, to let the world know that we torture innocent people might harm us in the war on terror. There's a lot more to this story, and I'll tell you more and later on in the broadcast. In fact, we're going to have William Goodman, the legal director of the Center for Constitutional Rights, talk about exactly the bills that are being proposed in Congress to allow us to do this kind of torture legally, where right now it is currently illegal. And then we've got another 2 hours to discuss all of this to your heart's content. A lot going on in today's show. I'm going to ask you to hold your calls just until the second and third hour because I do have a lot to talk about, and we'll be right back right after this.
United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
We look to the day when you can live in freedom, and America and Iran can be good friends and close partners in the cause of peace.
See, this is where we get a really bad reputation. I live in a country where I'm not even sure if my vote's going to count in November. How free are you? How free are the people on the Gulf Coast? How free are the families that still grieve for the bodies dragged out of Aracoma and Sago? How free are they? He throws around precious terms with precious little regard for them. How free are we that chose by a wide margin in the year 2000, November 2000, we chose a man named Al Gore to be the President of the United States? How free are we that we were saddled with this ignorant, ignorant, hateful little man? How free are we? How free?
I'm Bob Kincaid. Join me weeknights, 7 to 10 Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Did you receive an email from the IRS saying you're due a tax refund? If so, don't open it. The IRS does not request personal information by email. Hello, I'm Russell George, Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration. The IRS and I want to warn you about bogus IRS emails and websites that look real but are not. These emails are schemes played by crooks who are out to steal your money and identity. Fall victim to it, and you can spend months, even years, cleaning up the mess they've made of your good name and credit record. Help stop these crooks from ripping people off. If you get a suspicious email, go to IRS.gov and search for identity theft to find out what to do. That's IRS.gov. Or call us at 1-800-366-4484. Again, that's 1-800-366-4484. 4484.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. The administration says that we need torture. Well, they don't actually say that. You know, they're very cagey about it. They don't say we need torture. They say we need alternative techniques. The president has said, I don't support torture. But, well, there are a number of things that just aren't torture. Holding someone in a freezing cold room for weeks on end, that's not torture. We've all gone out in the snow. Being woken up every 10 minutes for days on end so you can never get 10 minutes sleep, that's not torture. We've all been woken up before. Being forced to stand for months on end. Well, that's not torture. We've all had to stand before. You see their logic? They're trying to take things that in small quantities are part of everyday life, but in large quantities are filled with such physical agony that I don't know how you can call it anything but torture. And the president says it's not torture. But he won't specify exactly what techniques, because when you specify them, like waterboarding, when you put someone on a board and dunk them underwater until they just about drowned, well, people found out that technique and they didn't like it, and so Bush says he won't do that. So he won't specify the techniques, but he says we've got to have these techniques to fight in the war on terror. We also need to be able to put people in prison without letting them know the evidence against them. If they know the evidence against them, well, then we're giving up classified information to a terrorist. Well, here's an idea, Mr. Bush. I mean, if the terrorist truly is a terrorist, and they hear the information, and they're convicted, and they're put in jail in life, for life, or executed, but if they're put in jail, I think we could hold him incommunicado, keep him from talking to the outside world. Fine, he knows the evidence. But if he's truly guilty, he won't tell anyone now, will he? Because he'll be in our prison. But Bush says, no, we can't provide the evidence. We have to have trials without letting the people know the evidence. And the trials, to me, remind me of the witch trials of Salem, Massachusetts in the 17th century. Do you remember those? If they thought a woman to be a witch, they would put her to a test. They would tie her arms together and her legs together and put a weight on her and throw her in the ocean. Now, if she sank to the ground, well, let's start first. What if she manages to escape her chains and manages to rise and manages to breathe again, which a few of them managed to do? Well, then obviously she's a witch. Only a witch could manage to escape those kinds of chains. And if a woman did manage to do that and to breathe again after being drowned, why, she was burned at the stake. Guilty. She's a witch. But what if she were not a witch? What if she were truly innocent? What if she were unable to break the chains and would drown to her death at the bottom of the ocean? Well, then she was truly innocent, and the people of Salem were sorry, and they would give her a decent burial because she was innocent. Don't you see that's exactly what we're doing, whether it's with Maher Arar or any of the others? Maher Arar was completely innocent, but guess what? When he was tortured, he claimed to be an Al-Qaeda operative. Can you blame him? If you were tortured and you knew the torture would stop, if you claimed to be an Al-Qaeda operative, wouldn't you blurt out the same? I admit it. I'll tell you right now. I would tell my whoever took me hostage, any amount of lies to stop the torture. In fact, the one thing that I hope I wouldn't tell the people torturing me is the truth. After all, if I were in the military, if I had secret intelligence information, I would hope that I would give them all kinds of information, but none of it true, none of it to desert my country. What's interesting is the administration has not been able to specify for us a single person, a single instance where they have tortured someone and gotten useful information. Usually they torture someone and the person tells them what they already know. But the question remains, maybe one day we will get useful information. Maybe one day we will stop a ticking time bomb. Maybe someday torture will save an American life. Is it worth it in that case? Those of you that heard my debate with Mike Lane yesterday know that this is exactly the argument the Republicans use, the old ticking time bomb argument. And I'm going to address that argument with my guest who's coming up after the break. His name is Bill Goodman. He's the legal director of the Center for Constitutional Rights, and he studied particularly all of these bills that are going on in Congress. It's an interesting question, but I think at the bottom of the line, you can't look at it just an example in an isolated situation. It's not like, okay, there's this one man, and it's usually a man, usually not a woman, although I guess it could be. So there's this one man, and he knows information to stop the ticking time bomb under New York City, and if you torture him in time, he'll stop it. That's the scenario. But you can't act like it's a one-time situation. When you do these kinds of things, the reverberations grow. Canada helped us. They helped us. They wrongly thought Maher Arar might have Al-Qaeda ties because apparently he was talking to two people who did have Al-Qaeda ties. And I don't even know that that's false. Granted, for a moment, maybe those two people did have Al-Qaeda ties that he talked to in the airport that he'd known in his mosque years ago. Maybe Maher Arar could have been detained for questioning in the United States. I don't have any problem with that. What I have a problem with is the torture. Because now, the next Al-Qaeda operative, will Canada tell us again? Will we refuse to even cooperate in an inquiry to determine whether or not a man is innocent? Will Canada want to cooperate with us again? Remember, under Bill Clinton, Canada helped us stop two people coming over from the Canadian border, one in Vermont, one in Washington State, to bomb Los Angeles International Airport. Thank you, Canada. But do you really think they'll help us again? Should a civilized nation stoop to help an uncivilized nation that leads people to torture? Think about it. Assume for the moment that the United States was a civilized nation. Assume for a moment that we did not countenance torture. Would we tell, the Syrian government, the Egyptian government, the Saudi Arabian government, one of our allies, about information that may indeed harm their governments if we knew that the person was going to be sent there and tortured? We might not. Maybe Canada won't be helping us. Italy already has an indictment out for 24 CIA agents who did this, who kidnapped someone who they thought was a terrorist and sent them to a country to be tortured. I think this time it was Saudi Arabia. And we're not cooperating with the Italian inquiry. Do we not need Italy's help in the war on terror? Even if torture could stop someone with a ticking time bomb, and it hasn't been proved that that's ever happened, in the aggregate, is it worth it to lose all the help of all our allies, people in England and France and Germany and Canada and Italy, all over the world, who might have information to help us? After all, there was a cell in Germany, and the Germans turned them over. But would they be likely to turn them over to a country that is us, that tortures someone? Think about it, friends, because it's a lot larger. It's a lot larger than just the issue of Maher Arar or even the issue of the ticking time bomb. When we come back, we're going to explore what's going on in Congress, the various bills to allow the president to do what he says he wants to do. And my guest will be William Goodman, the legal director of the Center for Constitutional Rights. Stay tuned. Lots more here on The Inside Scoop. And we'll be right back right after this.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters, all you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
This is Bruce Birch, and I'd like to invite you to join me for a brand new show here on the Horn, the Bruce Birch Radio Program. Tune in Monday through Friday, 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? If you did the unexpected? Would you feel scared? Proud? Relieved? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Or assisting an entrepreneur in Ukraine to launch her small business? Or creating a support group in Malawi for children orphaned by AIDS? What if you established your own path, one that others might follow? Would you rather make your own way or spend your life saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or go to peacecorps.gov.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I now have a guest on the line. His name is William Goodman. He's the legal director of the Center for Constitutional Rights. Bill, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Well,
I went in the first half hour, and went through all the details of the Maher Arar case because I think it gives a good example of what can go wrong in a regime that tortures people. I'd like if you could to explain, first of all, what your organization is about, and then I want to go get into some of the details about the bills that are being proposed in Congress. So tell us first about the Center for Constitutional Rights.
Well, the Center for Constitutional Rights is a public advocacy and civil rights institution which has attempted to represent the movement for social change in the context of the protection of constitutional rights. For 40 years, we are founded by a number of lawyers. Probably the best known would be William Kunstler, and it's that tradition that we function in.
Well, let's move on because right now there's a lot of different bills that are being going on in Congress, and there's frankly it's confusing because some deal with torture, some deal with the secret prison, some deal with warrantless wiretapping. Some deal with methods of torture. I know the president supports some, McCain supports others, and the Democrats support still others, usually the ones McCain supports. So help us sort out. Which of the bills, let's start with the bills you think are most likely to pass, or do you think that none of them at this point are likely to pass?
We're hopeful that none of them pass. Let's start with the two military tribunal detention bills. There's the Graham Graham Warner bill, which is supported by Senator McCain, on the one hand, versus the administration's bill on the other.
Now,
I think
obviously the administration's bill is harsher than the McCain bill, but I think what you're saying is you hope even the McCain bill doesn't pass.
That's right. I think the McCain bill has some good things in it, and the fact that it wants to protect and shelter the Geneva Convention from basically the destruction which would be wreaked upon it by the administration's bill is good and positive, and I applaud Senators McCain and Warner and Graham for doing that. The problem with that bill, and the same thing is true of the administration's bill, is that those bills deal with trials for a small handful of people who are in Guantanamo. The vast majority of people who are being held at Guantanamo will never be tried for anything, either in accordance with the Geneva Conventions or in violation of the Geneva Conventions. They are just being held indefinitely, and that, by the way, is a violation of the Geneva Convention.
Now, wait a minute.
The
McCain bill won't force those people to go to trial? I know there was a recent Supreme Court case where people in Guantanamo sued, and the Supreme Court said, hey, Guantanamo is under our power. It's the same as if it were under U.S. jurisdiction. You have a right to habeas corpus, and you have a right to have your case be heard. Am I missing something here?
The Hamdan opinion applied to the military tribunal situation. I'm telling you right now that at most there are 24 people to whom that might apply. There are over 450 people who are being held in Guantanamo right now. That means that most of them are not subject to this directly to the protection of the Hamdan opinion. Which
why not? Why specifically not?
What?
Why not?
That applies only to people who are being tried for war crimes by military tribunals. The rest of the people are being held as enemy combatants. And those people, the only protection they have is habeas corpus. They have most of them, virtually all of them, have filed in federal court for habeas corpus protection, which just requires the government to say, this is why we're holding them, this is what evidence we have, and if it's insufficient, the judge can order them to be released. That's all habeas is. It's a right that goes back to the 13th century, the Magna Carta, to King John and Robin Hood and King Richard, and we all remember those movies. That's what that right is, and it's ancient. And this right is for the first time in danger of being suspended by Congress, by this Congress.
Both corpus is in danger.
What?
Wait, both statutes, both McCain and the president's statutes, suspend habeas corpus.
That's right.
Now, I'm aware of the Constitution. I am a lawyer myself. And the Constitution clearly says that habeas corpus cannot be suspended except in cases of rebellion or invasion. In fact, I know that Abraham Lincoln, the only president to have suspended habeas corpus, specifically cited that provision in the Constitution saying, you know what, we have rebellion, so therefore it is an exception, if you will, that proves the rule, and therefore I'm going to suspend it for a short period of time. The Constitution clearly says you can't do that. Aren't these bills unconstitutional?
Article 1, Section 9, and specifically says Congress cannot do it, in fact. And, in fact, Lincoln's suspension of the writ was found to be, long after the fact, unconstitutional, ex parte Milligan. But the fact is, you're right. It probably is an unconstitutional suspension of the writ. The problem with it is that it will gum up the works for another 2 to 3 years. People who have been held already for 5 years, people who are completely innocent, who they have no right to be there, who've been torn away from their families and from their homes, and have been treated like dirt, will now be forced to do that for years more until the United States Supreme Court decides, is this or is this not a suspension of the writ of habeas corpus?
Bill, who are these people, and how do they get to Guantanamo Bay?
About 5% of them, according to a study by the Department of Defense, in fact, were picked up on the battlefield in Afghanistan. So presumably those people were fighting for either the Taliban or Al-Qaeda. They were fighters mainly, you know, low-level.
They'd be prisoners of war under normal conventions, I guess.
What?
They'd be prisoners of war under normal conventions.
If the administration would acknowledge the application of the Geneva Convention, these people would be traditional prisoners of war. That's right.
Okay.
But the administration refuses to do that, and therefore they are what they call enemy combatants, this new phrase. Now, the other 95% are people that were picked up elsewhere. either outside of the battlefields in Afghanistan or mostly in Pakistan. And the military offered rewards for people that that let's say Pakistanis or Afghanis would turn in. Most of them, you know, they if anyone was an Arab who happened to be in one of those countries, they would be fingered and they would be pointed, they would be taken off to Guantanamo, regardless of what they had done. And someone for dropping a dime on that person would get $5,000, which is a lot of money in those lands. And so most of these people are people who have done nothing, young people who are traveling, who are seeing the world. And, you know, they're all Muslims, virtually all Muslims. Some of them are clearly innocent. Even the Department of Defense agrees that they're innocent. The Chinese Uyghurs are good examples. These are people who can't now be returned to China and who are stuck. Or they're stuck in Albania, which, you know, next to Greenland, I can't imagine a worse place to be. And I shouldn't really be saying bad things about either of these countries. But the conditions in Albania are terrible. What?
Because you point out that they're stuck in Albania, and you mentioned the 400 or so people in Guantanamo Bay. George Bush tells us he shut down all the secret prisons and brought them at least all to Guantanamo. And yet, I have to wonder about people like Maher Arar that might be held by other countries at our bequest under extraordinary rendition. Are there a lot more people out there than the ones in Guantanamo Bay?
I think there are probably thousands. But the other thing is that I did not hear Bush clearly say he had shut down these CIA prisons. He said he was transferring 14 of the worst people he deemed the worst, to Guantanamo for trials. That does not mean the others were shut down. I think the others are still thriving institutions in which, torture and
playing with words here.
Supreme. What? Sorry.
He's playing with words here when he says he shut them down.
I don't think he shut them down. Right. You don't think he said he shut them down. But you're absolutely right. People like Mr. Arar, this is the franchising of torture. Sending it out to other countries who owe us a favor or who, you know, want their back scratched, Syria in that case, or to private companies, as they have done over and over again in Iraq. Have private companies do the interrogations and do the torture.
So the Bush administration's bill would largely ratify as legal the stuff that he's been doing for the last 4 or 5 years. Is that fair to say?
I think that's very fair to say. It would both ratify it. It would mean the Congress has now acted, which was the Hamdan case, which was decided by the court in June, basically said the president's actions are unconstitutional because he has no authority to act in this regard. Were Congress to pass legislation, it would be another matter. So these statutes will be action by Congress, which will then, I'm sure, be used as the president. By the president as a rationale for his doing all of these things he's been doing all along. I think that they're still probably illegal. I think the Hamdan case suggests that, but it'll give him cover to continue to act lawlessly.
And how is the McCain bill different?
Well, McCain says that we are not going to weaken the constraints of the Geneva Convention as far as interrogation goes. This is really one of the parts of the administration bill is an amendment to what's called the War Crimes Act, which was passed by Congress in 1996, which basically said it's a crime to violate the methods of interrogation and methods of detention that are prohibited under the Geneva Convention, which is cruel, inhuman, and degrading treatment. The president now has a whole series of things that he's listed specific things that interrogators cannot do, which leaves open a whole list of activities that interrogators can engage in that are equally as devastating. At the end of the day, sleeplessness is fine, keeping people in stressful, very painful conditions for hours and hours. Keeping them under frozen conditions with virtually no clothing on, forcing them to strip and be degraded and stand naked in front of the interrogators and fellow prisoners and women, or putting putting women's underwear on their bodies and on their faces and on their heads. All of these things continue to happen. Allowing them to go to the. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, the administration claims that we've had success, that these techniques, as awful as they are, whether with colleague Sheikh Mohammed or others, have led to us stopping al-Qaeda plots. They rarely are more specific than that. But is there any evidence that sometimes, you know, they always give out the ticking time bomb scenario. Some terrorist has got a ticking time bomb under New York City, and if we don't torture him, you know, the bomb will blow up unless we torture him to tell us where it is. Is there any evidence that there have ever been any successful tortures?
Well, you know, the people who promote torture, the Alan Dershowitzes of the world, say that there is. I think it's highly questionable. The best example that they always trot out is the one of the Filipino terrorists were captured, and because they were, according to these people, tortured, they provided evidence that prevented an airliner from being blown up. That example is really false, because if you look closely at it, what led them to the plot to blow up the airliner was the seizure of the people's hard drive. You know, who knows? I can't say that torturing Khalid Sheikh Mohammed has not resulted in useful information and prevented acts of terror. I don't think that this president has a lot of credibility. I don't think it's a good argument for torture. You know, we'd have to take a close look at that situation to see what other techniques were tried. Was there an attempt just to talk to the guy? You know, all of these things. But what we hear over and over again is that techniques in which one befriends someone, one comes, you know, develops a relationship, interrogator develops a relationship with the interrogated person, that works much better than hurting them. Hurting them results in false information. Anybody will give up anything and say anything you want them to. And generally, the results of torture by the experts are considered to be useless, no good at all.
As in the case of Maher Arar, who, when tortured, said, in fact, that he fought in Afghanistan,
as
when in
the
fact
case
he did
of
not.
Maher Arar, that's an excellent example.
We're going to do a short break now. Folks, if you want to call in, we just have Bill Goodman here for the rest of this hour. So the next 15 minutes, if you have a question for Bill, call in at 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. If you got a question for me, you want to talk about this issue in general, let's hold it for the second and the third hours. But if you got a good question for Bill Goodman, I want to encourage you to call in right now in the next 15 minutes, 888-488-MARK, and we'll be right back after this short break.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm having a fascinating discussion with my guest. His name is Bill Goodman. He is the legal director of the Center for Constitutional Rights. Bill, I want to ask about the some things that affect not just the detainees or whatever you want to call them, prisoners around the world, but affects you and me and three-quarters of American citizens. And I'm talking, of course, about getting our phone records. the warrantless wiretapping program that the administration has just, we've just discovered that he's been doing, that the administration's been doing. Three-quarters of us have had our phone records taken. Do any of the bills in Congress vindicate this, allow more warrantless wiretapping?
Well, they certainly do. I mean, this is the bill that has been both proposed by the administration and apparently supported by Senator Spector, although it's not completely clear yet. What they would like to do is take basically say that the whether or not this is unconstitutional, this program is unconstitutional, should have a one-time-only decision by the FISA court. This is the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act court, which is kind of a hand-picked court, and that all of these cases which have been pending, there have been decisions in Detroit, for example, going up on appeal. There will be a decision in our case here soon in New York. Undoubtedly, that will go up on appeal. That what this bill would do is say none of those opinions mean anything. We're going to basically rewrite the legal system as we've known it for 200 to 300 years in the United States. Get rid of this. We'll have the FISA court decide it, and that'll be the last say on it. And if the FISA court says it's okay, then the president can keep doing what he's been doing. What the president is doing is clearly illegal.
I was just going to say, I guess this wouldn't be a violation of the ex post facto clause, which says that you can't declare something a crime after it occurred. In this case, you'd be declaring something not a crime after it occurred.
Yes.
And that you can do.
Well, I mean, I guess victims don't have any rights anymore if you can do it. Everyone likes to talk about victims' rights until the perpetrator of the crime is the President of the United States, and they talk about the criminal's rights. You know, yes, this will immunize the criminal.
Before the criminals are immunized, before these bills go through Congress, do you think that someone would have a right to have a claim, just a simple claim, I'm a lawyer, a tort claim, where basically you say, I didn't want the President of the United States to know who I was calling. I'm going to sue for violation of my privacy. Or in a much more severe example would be, of course, Meher Arar or others suing for torture. Why can't we sue civilly, at least, against the government and seek damages against the administration for, heck, taking my phone calls without my permission?
The phone call example, yes, that would be a violation of the Fourth Amendment, maybe a violation of the First Amendment. The problem with that is
class action with 200 million people in it. What do you think?
What I think is that the problem with the claim for damages, you have to first prove that you were injured. And because this program is so highly secret, and because the government has taken the position that it's so secret that they can't even tell you whether they have tapped your telephone or not in the past, because that will reveal in the ins and outs of the war on terror, none of us know whether or not our telephone calls have been wiretapped, whether or not, you know, when you call down the street to order a pizza to be delivered, whether or not that's picked up. So, you know, Big Brother knows whether you're eating pizza tonight or last night or whatever it is, or who you're going out with. Or we all know, you know, we can imagine what our telephone calls are all about. We know that.
Well, it's interesting to me because, of course, we had a president that was impeached. Excuse me. They brought articles of impeachment. They passed the House Judiciary Committee, and he resigned to prevent him from being impeached. But we all know what we're talking about. In the Watergate scandal, the claim was that burglars from the Republican Party went in to violate the privacy of their political opponents, basically to find out what they were doing politically, and the president tried to cover it up. In this case, you have not a few political opponents, but arguably every single political opponent of the president had their phone calls taken. It seems to me that, you know, Watergate was just one building. It wasn't hundreds of millions. At least under the Watergate principles, it would seem like, heck, there might be articles of impeachment.
Well, the Center for Constitutional Rights has written a book called Articles of Impeachment Against George W. Bush. And the wiretapping program that they have engaged with is the first chapter in the book because it is so clearly illegal. At its greatest stretch, the president at least had to seek a warrant from the FISA court before he engaged in this wiretapping, or within 72 hours afterwards, even. You know, that's retroactive. That's right. Easy to do. And the fact that they haven't done it is simply an exercise in grabbing power and thumbing his nose at both the law, the Constitution, and the American people.
Is impeachment the only legal recourse we have to stop this kind of stuff?
No, we have. There have been lawsuits that have been filed. We at the Center for Constitutional Rights filed a lawsuit pending in the Southern District of New York against the government, against leading officials of government, and against the president, demanding asking the court to enjoin and compel the president not to continue to that he can't do this anymore. That's an order.
There was a case in Detroit where the citizens won, and the judge said that it was unconstitutional, but I believe that was stayed pending appeal. Is that right?
It is. It's been stayed, and it's going up on appeal to the Sixth Circuit. But sooner or later, these cases will win themselves through the courts, and we will have a ruling from probably the United States Supreme Court as to whether or not this action is constitutional and whether the courts can get it, weigh in and say it's illegal, don't do it.
We only have a few minutes left. I want to switch to one more topic. It kind of goes back to the first one, but it has to do with the Geneva Conventions. And George Bush is arguing that he can refine the Geneva Conventions. He can interpret the Geneva Conventions how he wishes with his bill. And John McCain and many others are saying that the United States can't afford to not go by these Geneva Conventions, Article 3. In the few minutes we have left, if you could explain why it's important to follow the Geneva Conventions.
Well, there are all sorts of reasons. The first and the one that the senators cite most often and is a very sound one is that once we start making exceptions for prisoners who we detain here in this country, other nations are free to make exceptions for our people who are detained on the battlefield and then held. If we can torture people or engage in cruel and human and degrading treatment against their people, why can't they do it to ours? So much of the thinking behind the Geneva Convention is self-protection. But it also goes to morality. If there are certain ways that one human being should just never treat another human. And that is in ways that are cruel and human and degrading. We just cannot and should not do this to other humans. And the fact that the world signed on to the Geneva Convention, this was in 1949. It was immediately after World War II. It was in face of the Nazi monstrosity. Everybody recognized the need for these broad general principles at that time. Now this president wants to set that aside. And it would be, I think, a terrible mistake. It would be a blow to those things for which the United States stands. If we start rejecting those kinds of principles, we have really been handmaidens. This government has been a handmaiden with the terrorists in the destruction of the best of Western society and Western democracy.
I wish we had more time, Bill Goodman. There's a lot I want to talk about with you, but I know you have limited time. You got to get back to that lawsuit and help Americans get their civil liberties back. So I want to thank you very much for coming here on the Inside Scoop and taking the time to be with us.
My pleasure. Good talking with you.
Good talking with you. The rest of you folks, we've got two more hours, lots of time for you to talk. How do you feel about the administration's ticking time bomb scenario? Is torture ever warranted? And why do you think it is that Americans, many of them, just don't get too upset about this idea that we might be torturing other people? Do you think it's a matter of them thinking, well, you know, it could never be them? Toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We've got two more hours to go, and I need to hear from you. I want to know what you think about the case of Maher Arar, what you think about John McCain, what you think about the future of the United States when these kinds of things can happen in our country. 888-488-6275. We'll be right back after this.
There's a fighter inside who will never give up. We are.
This is the Quality News Network. An impassioned speech at the United Nations this morning by Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez, who referred to President Bush as the devil and accused Washington of dominating and exploiting the peoples of the world. President Bush, still in New York, met with Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas today to talk about peace in the Middle East. The Security Council meets tomorrow for similar discussions. Thailand's king has now endorsed yesterday's military coup that removed the prime minister from power and has appointed the man who led the coup as the country's new head of the council. That general, who declared martial law, is promising a new constitution within 2 weeks and new elections by next October. The European Union is condemning the military takeover, and the U.S. and Britain, among other nations, are warning their citizens in Thailand to exercise caution. The violence continues in Baghdad, where 30 people, including 8 police officers, were killed in separate incidents today. Another 21 people died in random bombings in Mosul. The UN now says that more than 6,600 Iraqi civilians were killed in sectarian violence during the months of July and August. And a top U.S. commander is saying that the violence directed at U.S. troops is also on the increase in Iraq. Another night of violent protest in Hungary, where calls are increasing for the resignation of the prime minister, who was discovered saying on tape that he had lied to the public for years about the state of Hungary's economy, but he's still refusing to step down. The International Committee of the Red Cross will visit Guantanamo Bay next week to visit the 14 prisoners recently transferred there from secret CIA prisons. An 84-year-old San Francisco widow has been deported to Germany after it was discovered that she'd been an SS guard at a Nazi concentration camp during World War II. The German native moved to the U.S. 45 years ago and married a Jewish man whom she says never knew about her secret. He died 2 years ago. Political newcomer Deval Patrick has won Massachusetts' Democratic primary for governor. Patrick, who headed the Justice Department's Civil Rights Division during the Clinton administration, will face Republican Lieutenant Governor Kerry Healey in November. In Japan, Shinzo Abe has overwhelmingly been elected head of the ruling party, setting the stage for him to become Japan's next prime minister at the end of this month. The Committee to Protect Journalists reports that Iraq is the most dangerous place in the world for journalists to work. The CPJ study shows that 580 journalists have been killed worldwide over the past 15 years, 78 of them in Iraq, 60 in Algeria, 42 in Russia, and 37 in Colombia. And more than 5,000 people attended a memorial service today for Steve Irwin in Australia. Business and science are next.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network-quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to qualitynewsnetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
The Atlantis has been cleared for a return home tomorrow morning at 6:21 Eastern Time after an inspection by the crew showed no problems with the heat shield. There had been concerns because of several unidentified objects seen floating near the shuttle. Now NASA says it considers them harmless. The government is warning women that use birth control patches rather than pills that it may put them at higher risk for blood clots in their legs and lungs. Federal Reserve meeting today with most analysts predicting the Fed will make no change in interest rates, which are currently at 5.25%. Filmmaker George Lucas is giving his alma mater, USC, a gift of $175 million to be used to build a new home for the university's film school. Morgan Stanley today posted a 59% leap in quarterly earnings, and Microsoft is launching its Xbox 360 console in India and Africa, and also introducing a high-definition DVD player designed to match the Blu-ray disc functions of Sony's upcoming PlayStation 3. Rupert Murdoch says he's going to create a Chinese version of his popular MySpace website. Gold is trading this hour at $586.86 an ounce, 80 cents an ounce rather. Silver's at $11.13, and light sweet crude is still falling. It's down 66 cents a barrel, trading at $61 even this hour. On Wall Street, all the markets are up. The Dow up 77 at 11,618. Nasdaq is up 32 at 2254, and the S&P 500 is up 9 points at 1327. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Diana Walter, and it's now 5 minutes past the hour.
country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
You've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Sitting in for Guy James today from Washington, D.C., Mark Levine of Radio Inside Scoop.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. It is indeed an honor and a privilege to sit in Guy James' chair. Actually, I'm sitting in the same chair I was for the last hour, but it is an honor and a privilege to fill in for Guy James, who could not be on the show today. And I hope that those of you that are used to tuning in at this time will turn on your computers or radios just an hour earlier and listen to my show, The Inside Scoop, because, well, we have a lot to talk about. The whole first hour was devoted to the question of torture, secret evidence, secret prisons, the kind of country that the Bush administration wants us to have. It seems that we were considered a little too free, and the administration thought that we needed to remember those great paragons of virtue in the past, places like the Soviet Union, East Germany, places where citizens spied on other citizens, places where the government knew everything we were doing, places like George Orwell's 1984. And now, of course, there are bills in Congress to do that very thing, to legalize, well, to do so backwards after the president's already done these illegal acts, and to make it okay. And what's interesting is that while John McCain is getting a lot of credit for standing firm against the administration, even his bill, as we discussed last hour with Bill Goodman, the legal director for the Center for Constitutional Rights, even his bill would not allow most of the people we have detained to ever get a trial. So what do you think about all this? We got 2 hours to discuss it. I want to encourage you to call in. The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. You can also call the head-on number at 877-4-HEAD-ON. And join in the discussion. Do you think that the world looks at us differently because we torture people? Do you think it will harm us in the war on terror? Or do you think, you know what, a ticking time bomb could be there, and heck, we gotta torture people in order to do that? Certainly, Colin Powell has taken a stand, and I've criticized Colin Powell in the past for being a bit of an administration toady. We know from Ron Suskind's book, and even indeed from his chief of staff, Lawrence Wilkerson, that Colin Powell was very much, aggrieved, let's say, by the administration's policies while he was Secretary of State. And he wanted to speak out, but he didn't. He felt that he could do more good within the administration than without. And so when it came, for example, to coming to the United Nations and saying, in fact, that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction, even though Powell had his own doubts, he did what his boss, Vice President Cheney, told him to do. I know his boss is technically George Bush, but we all know who's in charge here. So Powell is speaking out. Powell has said, quote, that if we reinterpret the Geneva Conventions, it would encourage other countries to doubt the moral basis of our fight against terrorism, unquote. That's pretty strong words. Doubt the moral basis of our fight against terrorism. Is that what it does? Let's go to Jim from Florida. Jim, welcome to the Inside Scoop. Jim,
Mark,
from California, but you're in Florida. I got it.
Yeah, right.
Go ahead, Jim.
I just wanted to call. I'm Jim 3 in chat, and I've never called at the talk show before. I'm a little bit nervous about this, but I just thought I'd put my 2 cents worth in.
Go right ahead and don't be nervous.
I don't see any change coming unless we get back a balanced government in November, because just as Mike Malloy has said so many times on his program, this country was built on racism and genocide, and I don't think that possibly even the majority of Americans care one way or the other about people of color being tortured or even people here in the United States who are being eavesdropped on. Most of them would have the attitude that, well, I'm not doing anything wrong, so I don't care if they spy on me, and don't realize the abuses that could come through them singling out their political opponents for persecution through wiretapping. But I really just think that the basic attitude of the meathead American is not ready for change, and I hope I'm wrong in November, and I'll certainly be supporting Democratic candidates, but I see a very bleak picture if we don't win in November.
Well, Jim, I hear your point, and I agree with you. I'll tell you this. I think back to the famous quote by Pastor Martin Niemöller, who was a German pastor in World War II, and I don't have the quote in front of me, so I'm paraphrasing, but basically said, you know, first they came for the communists, but I was not a communist, and then they came for the Jews, but I was not a Jew, and then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak out. I think that to some extent you're right, Jim. I think that we think of the people down in Guantanamo Bay. They're Muslims. They're Afghani Muslims. We can't really relate to them. We don't think about them as people with families. To some extent, I think Maher Arar will be a good poster boy because although born in Syria, he lived in Canada for the last 20 years and has a wife and family, and he speaks English, and we can sort of relate a little bit more to him. And so I think he'll be a poster boy. But what's interesting to me is that what is getting very little attention, I think, is the president's eavesdropping program. I mean, we know that 225 million of us, basically all of us that didn't use, I think it's Questar out in the Denver area, but three-quarters of us have had our phone bills checked by the president. And I personally don't want him looking at my phone bills, and my guess is he's got them. So that's something that affects virtually every one of us. And I'm wondering, Jim, if you think that that gets people more upset than perhaps even much worse, torture, but torture of people who are non-American citizens and people of color.
Well,
I think?
Haven't. Maybe it's because I'm in a red state right now, and many of the people I run into just don't seem to be upset about it. And when I'm home in California, I see more reasonable people over there. I'm not trying to bad rap Florida. I'm grateful to be a guest here in this state. But on the other hand, I think that the fact that it has been thought of as a red state recently shows the there are probably more Republicans in Florida per capita than there are in California. And I just... I'm very afraid. I'm hoping that America will come to its senses in November and restore balance, and that doesn't even get into the issue of die bulb voting machines and issues like that. But
right.
Just hoping.
And I want to talk about those later on in the broadcast. But Jim, let me ask you this: which part of Florida are you in?
Right now I'm in Central Florida and Sebring.
Okay, Central Florida. Because I was going to say Southeast Florida is pretty blue. I don't consider Florida a red state. After all, the majority of them did choose Al Gore in 2000. I consider them a purple state.
Gore did win in reality in 2000.
Right.
And, yes.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So I consider Florida a purple state, one that can easily go either way. I think that certainly Senator Bill Nelson's going to be reelected against the crazy woman, Catherine Harris, he's running against. And so I think Florida really is teetering on the edge. And I actually think that you, Jim, and others in red areas of blue states or even in red states can do some good, particularly in a state like Florida that's such on the swing, by talking to people in Seabreeze and asking them if it bothers them that their privacy is being violated. And aren't they concerned that someone might make a mistake? I mean, Maher Arar, I think, is the classic example of any of us could be walking down the street, be thought of, what if you're in a store and there's a customer behind you and you talk with them, being the nice, friendly person that you are, and that person happens to have some connection to Al-Qaeda. And then they're worried that you have a... I mean, after all, that's what Maher Arar did. That was his crime. He spoke to people who we actually believe do have some connection. I don't know if it's true or not, but let's say they did have a connection. You folks could do the same. Anyone listening to my voice could do the same. You're nice to someone, and then suddenly they pick you up, and you're in Guantanamo Bay, and you're held without trial forever. Jim, have you talked with any of the people in Seabreeze about things like that? Do they just dismiss that? It's crazy.
Some political discussion, but as soon as I start coming, I'm sure it's just the county I'm in. Because when I try to get when they perceive that I'm a liberal, that's a good way to get rid of somebody. If I wanted to, they just tend to quickly avoid the subject and get away from me. That's been my experience so far. See, I come from the one of the media capitals of the world, and I live in Burbank, California, which is naturally quite liberal, and then I'm completely out of my element over here, and I agree it's a purple state, but this is a red county, I can tell you that.
Right.
Yeah, so...
I think it's important. I'll tell you, I think it's important to know how the red folks are thinking, if you will. In fact, I'm very proud of the fact that I have a longtime listener, and she knows. She listens to every show. She never calls in, but she's always listening. Her name's Vicky. She happens to be a fundamentalist Christian who takes the Bible literally. But she listens to my show because she knows that even though I disagree with her most of the time, I at least respect her and respect her views. And I would love it, Jim. Let's try a little experiment. How long are you going to be in Seabreeze?
Oh, only a couple more weeks. I'll be back in California for the election, so. But
okay, but you'll be there a couple more weeks. Tell you what, next week when I'm on the air, tell one of your friends in Seabreeze who disagrees with you politically and say, you know what? I respect your right to disagree. This is America. You have every right to believe what you say. But if you really believe something, you should be able to defend it, right? I mean, if you think that what you say is right, you should be able to defend it. I want you to get someone to call into my show from Seabreeze. You think you can do that?
Yes. Yeah, I'll try. I'll put it out there. And I've certainly told a number of people already about the network, and I'll certainly try that. By the way, it's Seabring, not Seabreeze.
Oh, excuse me, Seabring. Well, I'm not from Florida, so I didn't know that. I apologize.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what, if they call in, I will give them a chance to say their piece. I don't care what someone's views are. I give them a chance to talk unless I'm running out of time.
Well,
that's the only time I stop the conversation.
Right.
So I hope you can get one of them to call in, because I like to hear how the other side thinks. That's one of the reasons why I debate Republicans on the air all the time. And I think it's also one of the reasons why people like Bill O'Reilly and Rush Limbaugh and the like of them don't like to debate liberals, because they're afraid of a free and fair debate.
Exactly. And I'll do what I can here. If we give up hope, then we certainly have lost. So we have to keep trying. But I'll certainly give that thought and effort, Mark, and I really enjoyed talking to you.
I appreciate it. Thanks so much for your call.
Okay, bye-bye.
We've got many others on the line, and I promise to get to you all, every one of you. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back with more phone calls right after this.
United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
We look to the day when you can live in freedom, and America and Iran can be good friends and close partners in the cause of peace.
See, this is where we get a really bad reputation. I live in a country where I'm not even sure if my vote's going to count in November. How free are you? How free are the people on the Gulf Coast? How free are the families that still grieve for the bodies dragged out of Aracoma and Sago? How free are they? He throws around precious terms with precious little regard for them. How free are we that chose by a wide margin in the year 2000, November 2000, we chose a man named Al Gore to be the president of the United States. How free are we that we were saddled with this ignorant, ignorant, hateful little man? How free are we? How free? I'm Bob Kincaid. Join me weeknights, 7 to 10 Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Hi, my name is Aaron, and I'm a survivor of mannequinism. Mannequinism is basically when you turn into a hard plastic shell. This is from not being politically active. For me, it started when I didn't register to vote, and then I stopped volunteering, and before I knew it, I wasn't doing anything. and that's when I found the first sign. A small, discolored, hard patch of plastic on my right shoulder. I thought it would go away on its own, but it didn't. It kept spreading. And when I could no longer conceal it with a t-shirt, I knew I had to see the doctor. He said I had this early stage of mannequinism and that my only hope was to get involved, even if it was something simple. So I began reading the newspaper and instantly got feeling back in my arm. I guess you could say I'm living proof you can fight mannequinism.
Protect yourself from mannequinism. Log on to fightmannequinism.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We're talking about torture. Is torture an American value? Well, the Bush administration seems to think so, and a lot of my callers don't. My next caller is Ben Birch. Let me tell you something about Ben. Ben is the founder of the White Rose Society. His website is whiterosesociety.org. He has been archiving the Inside Scoop, this show, for the better part of 3 years now, along with at least a dozen, probably more than that now, of liberal hosts, just about everyone on the horn, I think, as well as other liberal hosts. He does a terrific job, and I know he gets virtually nothing for it. And Ben's probably calling to talk about politics, but I just have to give a quick shout out and say what an incredible, wonderful person he is. He's the kind of person, in fact, that, movements are made of. Okay, enough with the compliments. Ben, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Thank you very much. First of all, you could be excused for thinking there's a sea breeze, Florida, because there is.
Oh, okay. Good, good. Thank you.
It's on that barrier island across what they euphemistically call a river that's leeward of Daytona Beach.
I'm glad to know I'm not crazy there. Thank you for that, Ben.
Yes. And second of all, you know, I think the whole ticking time bomb argument comes down to something really vital about the American character that I think we've lost sight of. We're braver than that. Do you remember the book Airport? One of the subplots in there was a fellow putting a bomb on an airliner so that he could collect the insurance money.
There are a bunch of movies, I think. I remember Airplane, which was the joke of making fun of, I think, the airport movies. Is that right? Is that
yeah,
the right?
There was a movie. It was originally a novel surrounding right. A series of events at the fictitious Lincoln International Airport near Chicago, which just happens to be in the same spot that O'Hare Airport is.
I got it.
One of the major subplots was somebody putting a bomb on an airliner. That was 1967, and in fact, if you look through accident reports, as I have, you find airplanes brought down by bombs in the United States as far back as the 30s. Did we go crazy then and start doing cavity searches of people and looking through all their luggage and going absolutely crazy in every newspaper and radio show on the land about the threat of bombs on airliners? We didn't. You know, it wasn't until there was a true rash of airplanes being diverted to Cuba that we even started doing metal detectors.
Right.
Okay, and that I think that's only because at the time, well, that's because we were actually afraid of the guy with the gun, you know, making the plane go to Cuba, because everyone knew Castro would send you home. It's because it had become such a royal annoyance. Now, however, we seem to act as though we're afraid of that ticking bomb, and we didn't used to. We used to be braver than that. We used to say, well, we're not going to torture you, but we're going to find that bomb. And whether we did or we didn't, we were brave enough to face up to it.
So you think that we're actually less brave as Americans than we were 20, 30, 50 years ago?
Yes, I think we have lost our bravery, and that is the reason for all of this desire for protection. We didn't need homeland security back then. We knew that if anybody came here, we'd kick their butt.
You know, Ben, I I don't know. Because I certainly know that back in the 50s, they had, you know, those duck and cover videos. They had plans. I know that in California, for example, there were fears the Japanese might invade, and people, you know, there were kinds of precautions. I don't know that it's fear that's so much different as maybe our willingness to go down to our enemy's level, which I think is kind of a different thing. What do you think?
Well, I think there is an element of that. But, you know, I think both of those threats were rational fears. You know, it was entirely possible the Japanese could decide to make a landing on our west coast.
Well, it's entirely possible that Al-Qaeda could hijack another airplane and take it to the Sears Tower, right?
Sure, but what's the scope of what's the magnitude of the disaster there? You know, look at it rationally. A couple thousand Americans died.
Right,
so, you know,
right.
So what? A couple of thousand Americans died on the road last week.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I don't agree with you, Ben. I mean, while I certainly agree with you that we shouldn't resort to torture, I don't want to minimize the threat either. I mean, I for one, and you and I may disagree on this, and if we do, that's fine. I mean, I, for one, supported the war in Afghanistan because they did kill 3,000 Americans,
oh,
and
sure.
I was ready
to
fight.
We had to go get Bin Laden. That was our number one priority, and we should have done it. Of course, we failed completely.
Right. Well, we failed largely because the administration wasn't doing it right. I think it was possible. I think we certainly had the possibility of catching Osama bin Laden. It's just that we diverted all the attention from Afghanistan to Iraq.
We didn't want to catch him. Because that's what it really comes down to, is this administration didn't want to catch him because he knows that Americans are just not as brave as we used to be and that he can use that against us.
Or maybe, yeah, it's a fear. If Osama's out there, then he's the boogeyman. We can always be scared that he's going to harm us any moment. It's kind of like Big Brother in 1984, always needed an enemy around.
Yeah, it's always Goldstein. Always
right.
Goldstein in the moment of hate. And you can't possibly catch him. You know, even if he were dead, he'd be alive.
Maybe your dog has him right now. What do you think?
I kind of hope so.
I hear the barking in the background.
Into useless garbage, so, you know, that would be a good thing.
Ben, thank you so much for calling in. I don't want to cut you off. Is there anything else you wanted to say?
That's it, my friend. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for the terrific work you do in archiving both my broadcasts and the other many broadcasts right here on the Head On Radio Network. This is Mark Levine filling in for Guy James. We've got an hour and a half to go, and I want to hear from you. The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back with more of the Guy James Show, or the Inside Scoop, however you want to call it, right after this.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters, all you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
We look to the day when you can live in freedom, and America and Iran can be good friends and close partners in the cause of peace.
See, this is where we get a really bad reputation. I live in a country where I'm not even sure if my vote's going to count in November. How free are you? How free are the people on the Gulf Coast? How free are the families that still grieve for the bodies dragged out of Aracoma and Sago? How free are they? He throws around precious terms with precious little regard for them. How free are we that chose by a wide margin in the year 2000, November 2000, we chose a man named Al Gore to be the President of the United States. How free are we that we were saddled with this ignorant, ignorant, hateful little man? How free are we? How free? I'm Bob Kincaid. Join me weeknights, 7 to 10 Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Here's a little test for you. Identify the following water-saving devices around your home. Using water wisely is important since our growing population puts pressure on this limited resource. Ready? That's water-saving device number 19, your outdoor faucet. Check faucets, sprinklers, and hoses for drips or leaks to save water and money. That's your toothbrush, water-saving device number 54. Turn the faucet off while you brush and save up to 25 gallons a month. It's water-saving device number 11, your water bill. If it's unusually high, you could have a leak. Learn to detect and repair leaks by contacting your water provider. Last clue? That's BeWaterSmart.net, a helpful website full of water-saving tips from the Water Conservation Coalition and your local water provider. There are a number of ways to save water, and they all start with you. Water. Use it wisely.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We're talking about torture. It's interesting. Neither the FBI nor the Defense Department want to use torture. Apparently the CIA wants to do it, but defense officials say that actually you can get more cooperation by being friends with the prisoner rather than by inflicting discomfort. And, you know, we have at least anecdotal evidence that that's true. I had a terrific call by Sarge yesterday from Mississippi. He talked about in World War II, where we had German prisoners of war, hardened Nazis. I mean, people who were involved in some of the worst crimes of humanity in the last century, yet they came to the United States. They expected to be tortured. They were ready to be tortured. They were ready to hold out against the torture, to resist the physical pain. They had been trained, in fact, to resist the physical pain, to hold out, not to give any secrets away. And we tricked them with the trickiest torture we had. It was called kindness. We were nice to even the Nazi prisoners of war. And believe it or not, it worked. They broke down. After a few months of kindness, when they expected torture, they gave up their Nazi ideology and told us lots of details that helped us in the war. Amazing, isn't it? Killing evil with kindness. Well, the Republicans, though, well, they want to use this as a campaign issue. As John Boehner, the head of the House Majority Leader, the guy that took Tom DeLay's spot, said the other day, he said, quote, "Democrats care more about protecting terrorists than protecting Americans," unquote. You see how that works so well in a soundbite? Telling a story about Nazi Germany, that takes time, that takes effort, you can't get that in the evening news. But Democrats care more about protecting terrorists than protecting Americans? Short, swift, false. But has the ring of being true because, of course, Democrats are saying we shouldn't be torturing even our enemies. And so it's a great campaign issue for them, folks, and it's a problem for us. The phone lines, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275, and we've got Nathan from Powers and Morrison on the line. Nathan, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Thank you for having me, Mark. Pleasure to be here.
Thanks for calling in.
Your program is fantastic as always, and it's great that I can get you directly on my computer now here at work.
That's a good thing. I hope your boss doesn't find out. Are you okay with this?
Oh, they're fine. I did want to add a little bit the interview you had with Director Goodman earlier. You guys mentioned the Constitution, and I wanted to take that just one step further and mention the Declaration of Independence. Specifically in the Declaration, it says, well, first it starts out, for those who don't know it, with a short summary of why people were angry with King George when we started this country. And then it lists about 20 or 30 reasons of the things he's done that made us declare independence from England. And written specifically in there, it says, for depriving us in many cases of the benefits of trial by jury and for transporting us beyond the seas to be tried for pretended offenses. And that's specific to your topic today. And you guys have been talking about dumbed down America and the sound bite clip mentality that people have going on here. And I want everyone to know that the Declaration of Independence is only one page long. You can print this out at a Kinko's. You can hand it out to your friends. And it's only a page. They might just read it. It's very specific, and it's very relevant today, and I just wanted to add that to the conversation.
No, it is very specific, and one of the interesting things is that, of course, we are trying these people away from their home countries. And, you know, I just noticed the other day when we fired Saddam Hussein's judge. Now, I don't think, I have any reason to believe that this judge was not going to find Saddam Hussein guilty, but he was trying to be fair. He was trying to show both sides. He said something that, I don't agree with. He said, in fact, that Saddam Hussein was not a dictator, but the people around him made him a dictator.
That's a very good.
I don't know. I don't agree with that judge. But just because I don't agree with him, does that mean that we have to get rid of him? I mean, what does that do for the appearance of justice, the appearance of fairness?
It shows right through the illusion of fairness to what they're really going for, which is a predetermined decision. And that's not
exactly.
Fair. Yeah.
And it's interesting when you talk about King George. I mean, that's exactly what people wanted. They wanted a trial by their peers. And what's interesting is that the terrorists, I shouldn't call them terrorists because, frankly, most of them probably aren't. The people that we have in Guantanamo Bay, most of whom, in fact, are innocent, as Bill Goodman pointed out. But whoever these people are, whether guilty or innocent, if we were to try them in America, they would be tried far away from their home countries. They certainly wouldn't be tried by a jury of Afghani Muslims. At best, they'd get one American Muslim on a jury, given the demographics, probably not even that. They'd be tried by probably Americans in Florida or California or wherever. I believe in the jury system, and I think the Americans would try to be fair. But, you know, these are Americans with American sensibilities. I'm sure they have very different views on what happened September 11th than most Afghanis do. And yet, even that, the administration won't try. I frankly would be okay with that. I'd be okay with an American jury trying some of these people. You could argue that even that's unfair because they're not being tried by a jury of their peers back in Afghanistan. But the administration won't even trust Americans to try these people. And you have to wonder, what are they afraid of? Go ahead.
I do wonder. Well, actually, I need to let you go here, Mark, and get back to today's work here. But I wanted to tell you, keep up the great work. And this is a very, very important conversation you guys are having today.
And keep up the work that you're doing. For those that don't know, Nathan is the Morrison half of Powers and Morrison. He's got a terrific website, powersandmorrison.com. They've been focusing on the Horn this week, which we at the Head On Radio Network very much appreciate. And if you haven't checked out that site, folks, you really should because Nathan does a lot of good work. So thanks for calling in.
Thank you. We'll talk to you soon.
Toll-free number, 888-488-MARK. Lines are open, 888-488-6275. And, you know, the question is, in some sense, what kind of people we are. Nathan brings up the Declaration of Independence, and he's certainly got a good point. We began complaining about certain things that King George had done, a number of ways in which he had violated our civil rights. And now we're violating the civil rights of others. And what I find so interesting is that so few people in our military want to torture. I mean, you would think, heck, the military, that's the reddest area of America. Certainly, folks in the military tend to vote 70-80% for the Republicans. Frankly, if it weren't for the African-Americans in the military, if you just look at the white people in the military, you'd probably find 80-90% voting for Republicans. These are the most conservative Americans, and yet you ask the average GI whether he wants to do waterboarding, whether he feels it's necessary to fight in the war on terror, and the great majority of them say no. And I think Colin Powell, well, illustrates this principle well. And I think he's talking out not as the former Secretary of State of the United States. He's talking out as, the former Joint Chiefs of Staff, as a guy who's been in the military for 30 years, a person who knows what the average Joe in the military is thinking about. And it's interesting because the president tried really hard to get the media, to get the military judges, the people who'd be implementing his proposals, to sign on. He really pushed them hard. And, well, they wouldn't. They wouldn't agree. And at best, they said that they didn't have an objection to two sections. And to get even that was like pulling teeth out of them. In fact, it's amazing, really, because when you think about it, these military judges serve at the president's will, right? And at his whim. He can fire them at a moment's notice. In essence, they have to kind of at least begrudgingly sign on, or they might want to look for other jobs. And yet even they have stood firm. And, of course, you've got people like Lindsey Graham, John McCain. Listen, Bill Goodman pointed out, McCain doesn't go far enough. McCain may be a hero compared to, you know, the crazy people we have running our government. But that doesn't mean that his bill doesn't also harm us. It would, as Bill Goodman points out, it would destroy habeas corpus. It might give 5% of the people in Guantanamo Bay a fair trial, but it wouldn't give the other 95%. So, you know, don't think I'm pro-McCain. I do think McCain is an honest man. I'll grant him that. I think he's trying to do the right thing, but I also think he's far too conservative for my taste. He allows far too much torture for my taste. But certainly he's an improvement over George Bush. And I think it's because McCain and Colin Powell, I don't think it's because they're pro-terrorist, right? John Boehner, anyone who supports this bill is protecting the terrorists. Is he saying that John McCain and Colin Powell support terrorism? Is that what he's saying? John McCain, who himself was tortured in a North Vietnamese prison, they tried to release John McCain because they thought an early release might help them in public relations, and he refused, and so they tortured him more. Are they really saying that he supports the terrorists? What McCain is saying, what Powell is saying, what Lindsey Graham are saying is that this sets precedent. That for 57 years, 60 years actually, since the end of World War II, some 57 years since Geneva Conventions were signed, we said that we were going to abide by them. We were going to abide by humane, civilized treatment. And when we go below those standards, what is the rest of the world to think? I must have asked this question 4 or 5 or 6 times yesterday, if you heard my program debating with Mike Lane, and he just wouldn't answer it. He just wouldn't answer it. He'd talk about, well, you know, ticking time bombs, and he'd talk about the need to fight the war on terror. But what he didn't approach is the question I repeatedly asked him, which is whether the United States should hold ourselves to a standard below that of other civilized nations. Do we really think we need to hold ourselves to a lesser standard than other civilized nations? It's a tough question, but I want to get some help from you in answering it. The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275, and we'll be right back with your questions, your answers, your beliefs on America and terrorism right after this.
United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
recently on The Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
If you have tuned into this program by mistake right now, and you are a Republican, a right-wing Republican specifically, before this program is over, I do want to warn you, you're going to think that I'm the devil. You're going to think I've got horns and a red cape because I hate the Bush administration and everything they stand for. So be warned right away, okay? You're all warned right now that that's where we're coming from today.
Don't miss Guy James weekdays, 3 to 5 Eastern Time on the Head On Radio Network.
Did you receive an email from the IRS saying you're due a tax refund? If so, don't open it. The IRS does not request personal information by email. Hello, I'm Russell George, Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration. The IRS and I want to warn you about bogus IRS emails and websites that look real but are not. These emails are schemes played by crooks who are out to steal your money and identity. Fall victim to it, and you can spend months, even years, cleaning up the mess they've made of your good name and credit record. Help stop these crooks from ripping people off. If you get a suspicious email, go to IRS.gov and search for identity theft to find out what to do. That's IRS.gov. Or call us at 1-800-366-4484. Again, that's 1-800-366-4484. 4484.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Well, the president claims that he does what his generals ask him to do, but in this case, he's not, because our generals don't want to torture anyone. In fact, they've told the president of the United States that they're not going to carry out his torturing program unless Congress specifically told them to. Why? Well, because the United States Supreme Court said they can't. And unlike Bush, you may have heard a couple really last week, but also on Monday, I did Cheney's interview on Meet the Press, and he was asked the question of, well, you know, the Supreme Court has declared this illegal. How do you keep doing it? And he says, well, I disagree with the Supreme Court. Vice President Cheney, you're welcome to personally disagree with the Supreme Court, but you're not welcome to not follow what they say. I mean, I disagree with the Supreme Court all the time, but if they order me to do something, I salute and I do it. And so even though Bush wants to do this, the people in the military have said they're not going to do it unless Congress allows it. And in support of the torture bill, they got five Pentagon lawyers. The most they could squeeze out of them was four sentences that didn't object to two provisions. But basically, they don't want to do it. They don't think it's necessary. Major General Scott Black, the Army's Judge Advocate General, sent a new letter to John McCain saying further redefinition of the Geneva Convention, quote, is unnecessary and could be seen as a weakening of our treaty obligations rather than a reinforcement of the standards of treatment. So even our military doesn't want to do this, but George Bush wants it, and he wants it bad. We'll go back to the phones, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Gordon from Michigan, longtime caller. Welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Hi, Mark. So what is our moral authority when we stop being a good guy?
I don't know, Gordon. I don't know.
We're led by leaders who have faith, but what do they have faith in? They have faith in evil. And then what side does that put God on? Is he still on our side?
You know, there are those of us that believe in America because we believe in the ideals of America. We believe in the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence that Nathan brought out. We believe in freedom, democracy, liberty, all those concepts that they teach us as little kids in school. And then there are those that think of America as, how can we get these 50 United States as much power as possible? And it doesn't matter if we give up our principles. It's all about making us better off. And I think they sincerely believe, although I disagree with them, that by torturing people, they will protect America. Now, as I pointed out, even the military doesn't seem to think that's true. But I think their goal is not to protect American ideals, but to protect, I don't know, the corporations and all that become rich. It's very unclear.
Well, there's a difference between wearing a white hat and wearing a black hat. And perhaps it's a little harder, more difficult to wear that white hat, but in the end, I think that's the side that God's on. And
it
I played this
difficult.
Game in Vietnam, and I went in there wearing the white hat, and about 5-6 months into my tour, I started wearing that black hat. And it took me a good couple decades to be able to put that white hat back on again. And it was
Is it fear? Is it anger? What causes people to give up their principles?
You're right. It starts with fear, and it develops into anger, and it's a vicious cycle that you can't escape from. And when you try to escape, you just have all these different easy reasons to stay within this vicious circle.
You've mentioned in the past on this show, Gordon, some of the abuses that you saw in Vietnam, that you saw GIs, in effect, torture, I guess that's the appropriate word, some of the Viet Cong.
That's true. At our level, at the very basic combat level in the jungle, we would sometimes come upon captured VC and NVA, and we would do extreme tortures, something that was taught to us by the NVA. It was something called a Cambodian circumcision. And I'm not going to go into graphic detail about it. You can let your imagination go on that, but
we didn't
get information. We usually just got death.
You just killed.
And, you know, if we wanted good information, that torture wasn't the way to do it. And the NVA were just too hardened to give us information anyway.
So you say torture wasn't the way to do it. Was there any way to get information from them? Could you befriend them, or was just you never could get information?
Well, sometimes with our Kit Carson scouts who were actually captured sappers, they could befriend them and calm them down and trick them into giving us some information, which they didn't think was they were giving to us. But if GIs were trying to do it, there would be no way we could get information from them.
Well, you didn't even speak the language, so
no.
It'd be pretty hard to get information out of them. It's interesting. Do you think that America here at home, that there's a difference between Vietnam and this war in Iraq? Do you find that Americans care less because there's no draft, perhaps, about the GIs in Vietnam than they do with the GIs in Iraq today? What do you think?
I think the American people care deeply, but it's more sublimated because it's not as raw as thinking that, well, hell, I might be the next person to go. But I think the American people care deeply, and we're going to find out just how much the American people care because the truth is becoming the surface more and more.
I'll tell you, Gordon, though, when you listen to the Republican rhetoric, and I really want your advice on this because I did a show just Monday, in fact, where the parents of a Marine in the local area who died at age 19, had always wanted to be a Marine, had always wanted to serve his country, asked us, he died in Iraq just last week. In fact, he joined on September 11th, 2001, and was buried on September 11th, 2006. And he wanted to be a Marine, he wanted to defend his country, and we certainly were honored to be able to give a tribute to this young Marine. But at the same time, the Republicans are very clear in saying that those of us who disagree with the aims of the Iraqi war are harming our troops, trying to cut and run. And there are certainly some troops who, and I'm sure it was true in Vietnam, getting mad at the people at home, trying to bring them home, because they're saying, in effect, hey, we got a job to do, and you don't believe in us. How do you get past? I mean, I don't know. Let me ask you this question first. When you were in Vietnam, what did you think of the people marching in the streets, the peace activists, to bring you home? Were you glad they were there, or were you upset at the time they were there?
Well, there was a time in my tour when I was unaffected by them, but later in the tour when I realized the disillusionment of what I was going through and the whole mission, that there was no real valid mission, and if there was a mission, we were working against it, I thought that the people of peace were trying to get closer to some type of a solution, and whereas we were on the other side of it. We were working against solutions.
I mean, I wonder today, because the military is a voluntary military rather than a draft military, and I know that, you know, they tend to be more conservative politically. It's a touchy subject, I have to admit. I mean, I want to bring them home. I think I'm doing what's best for them. I look at this kid, this 19-year-old. I don't want to say his death has been in vain. I certainly am not going to say that to his parents. I appreciate for his sacrifice. I especially appreciate he joined on 9/11, and I value it. At the same time, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, you know what? He did die in vain. How do you even address that without offending a large group of people? I have to tell you, as a commentator, I have trouble figuring out the proper way to address the fact that while I strongly value those who are willing to serve their country, and I really do, at the same time, I don't always agree with where the president sends them, and I wish that he hadn't died, and I think he'd be alive today if we didn't have this idiotic policy. How do you convey that without offending people? I have trouble with it. I don't know if you have any answers.
Well, I think the only real answers you can give to people are what you see are the truth. The truth is going to hurt, but to realize that people who are killed in war, whatever their motives or intents are, they're all victims of this larger scope idea, which is really a disease we're all caught up into. We can try to make it pretty. We can probably make platitudes about it. We say, oh, you died for this or that, but in the end, he did die a horrible death, and how do you console people for that? It's something that people have to come through their own mourning to come to the truth.
I think to some extent we need to be able to separate our feelings and our kindness toward victims and victims' families and U.S. policy. I mean, when people take hostages, for example, you may want to give in to the terrorists taking the hostage so you get the hostage free, and you certainly feel for that family, but at the same time that just encourages more hostage taking. As much as we want to support our troops, and let me be clear, our troops are sent there with improper they didn't have the armored vests they needed to have, the armored cars they needed to have, the improper equipment. They're being sent in the wrong places. There are lots of ways we can support them without bringing them home. No matter what your views are on the war in Iraq, you can support at least the idea that if we're going to send troops out there, we need to send the best protected troops we possibly can. I would hope that's something that all Americans can come together on. But I also think at some point you have to say to the 18 and 19-year-olds, it's not we value your sacrifice. We just think there's better places for it. You can go in Pakistan, go out after Osama bin Laden instead of going and being in the middle of an Iraqi civil war and judge it on the policy. Because whether you value the sacrifice, as I think 99.9% of us do, and whether you agree with the policy are entirely different questions. And I don't think they should ever be allowed to conflict with each other. And, in fact, that's why I find so offensive the Republicans that suggest that somehow Democrats aren't supporting our troops. Hey, Gordon, thank you so much for calling in, as always. I always appreciate when you do.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to take a break and then go on to the third hour. Still plenty of time for your calls. We can open it up to discussing more than just torture and the United States putting people in prison. I mean, you know, this is some pretty ugly stuff. We can talk about some things that are not necessarily as grim as this subject. But I want to encourage you to call in 888-488-MARK, 888-488-MARK is a way to remember it. You can also call in on the basic head-on radio network at 877-4-HEAD-ON. And this is Mark Levine, proud to stand in Guy James' place, and we'll be on for one more hour right after this. I'm chasing the shadow, I can't see a thing. It's dipping and dying.
Quality News Network. At the United Nations General Assembly today, Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez called President Bush the devil, which drew some applause from the audience. The leftist leader accused the U.S. government of, quote, domination, exploitation, and pillage of the peoples of the world, end quote. The U.S. ambassador to the U.N., John Bolton, who was not in the assembly hall during the speech, said Chavez's remarks don't warrant a response. In New York today, President Bush met with the Palestinian leader Mahmoud Abbas to discuss the situation in the Middle East. President Bush called him a man of peace. In Washington, two critical congressional issues in President Bush's anti-terror agenda may be moving forward. One is a wiretap bill, and the other involves treatment of detainees. In Thailand, the army commander who seized power yesterday received the endorsement of the country's king following the bloodless coup. He pledges that elections will be held by next October, and he will act as the interim prime minister. The United States, Australia, Japan, and the European Union have all condemned the takeover. In Iraq, a top U.S. military spokesman says the number of attacks against American troops has increased, most have been by roadside bombs or suicide car bombers. That follows al-Qaeda in Iraq's call earlier this month to target American forces. Additionally, with the start of the Islamic holy month of Ramadan next week, an increase in violence is also expected. In Baghdad, the new judge in the Saddam Hussein genocide trial threw the former Iraqi leader out of court today after he protested the removal of the previous judge. Hussein's defense lawyers also walked out of court today. In Budapest, for the second night in a row, protesters clashed with police. The violence initially began after the prime minister admitted on tape that he had lied about the country's economy to win the election. U.S. Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson is making his first trip to China. Today it was announced that both countries set up high-level teams to hold economic talks. The overthrow of the Thai government is causing concern among officials of the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund, who have been meeting this week in Singapore. And the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention say that 131 people in 21 states have been sickened by E. coli bacteria linked to fresh spinach. Health officials are still trying to pinpoint the exact source of the contamination. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business news are coming up next.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
Space Shuttle Atlantis has been cleared for landing tomorrow. NASA concluded that the mysterious space debris identified yesterday floating outside of the spacecraft did not cause any damage. The Russian space capsule carrying the first paying female space passenger docked today at the International Space Station. The state of California is suing six car makers to hold them liable for their vehicle emissions and the damage these greenhouse gases cause the state. The suit is against Ford, GM, Toyota, Chrysler, Honda, and Nissan. Al Gore's Current TV is entering a partnership with Yahoo. The focus will be on channels that carry videos created by young viewers. Boeing has been awarded a $2 billion federal contract to build high-tech equipment to combat illegal immigration along the U.S.-Mexico border. Software company Oracle reported quarterly profit that topped Wall Street estimates, largely due to growth in new business software licenses. The Federal Reserve met today and decided to leave the key interest rate unchanged, which stands at 5.25%. And third quarter earnings at Morgan Stanley, the largest U.S. investment bank, were up 59%, setting a quarterly record. Light sweet crude is trading at $60.20 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. And on Wall Street this hour, the Dow is up 60 points, the Nasdaq is up 26 points, and the S&P 500 is up 6. There's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramov. It's now 5 minutes past the hour.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the third hour of the Inside Scoop. If you are listening in thinking you've got the Guy James program, don't touch that dial. It is the Guy James hour, actually the second hour of his show. But Guy James couldn't do a show today, and so he kindly asked me to fill in, and I am gratified to have this opportunity and to fill in for Guy James. And he'll be back next week, I suspect. For now, you got me, and if you've heard the Inside Scoop before, you know that I am a congressional attorney, a former congressional attorney, actually, that I left working for the Democrats in the House of Representatives on the House Judiciary Committee and Homeland Security Committee because I couldn't stand the information that I was hearing wasn't being put out in public, information such as the administration was cherry-picking intelligence and trying to fix the facts around the intelligence. Heck, that didn't come out until the Downing memo a couple years later, but I had to go and report it early on the Inside Scoop. And one of my longtime listeners, he's been listening for more than 2 years now, is Dave from California. Dave, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
It is that indeed that very day from Humboldt, and it's a voice out of your past, Mark. Good to hear you again.
Good to hear you again. Good to hear you calling in again.
Yes, Alice and I listen to Guy every day, pretty much, and it's good of you to cover for him. I sometimes try to listen to you, too. It still sounds crazy, but I am still plagued by high-tech goon hackers, and it still sounds as nutty as ever. But actually, the Radio Inside Scoop was about the only blog I was ever permitted to join because you don't require a sign-in and a registration.
That's true.
Huh?
And because I don't, I am plagued by constant spam, I'll have you know, that I'm constantly working on deleting, but I do that so that I keep it open for those that legitimately want to comment.
Yes. Well, they wouldn't let me, of course, here on the Horn Chat either, but you have an excellent producer there, very helpful, ELO. And she undertook it herself to do it, so she invented a name for me and a password and then handed it off to me, so I legitimately found a way to be on the Horn.
Terrific. Well, I hope you listen in, not just for Guy James, but also an hour earlier for my show from time to time.
I do.
What's on
try.
Your mind about the torture and secret prisons, warrantless wiretapping? What are you thinking about all this?
Well, I think it's just one more extreme misuse and abuse of the powers that this administration flaunts in so many ways. I believe it does absolutely no good to torture people into confessing because they will say just about anything. I also believe that most of what we hear of as Al-Qaeda and terrorists and insurgents and all these words that they throw at us are really people who don't like having their country invaded and don't like us there stealing their oil and ruining their country for them. Those who resist become labeled as these things, terrorists and insurgents and whatnot.
You know, even our Defense Department has admitted that more than 90%, and heck, if they say 90%, it's probably 98%, of the people that are fighting us in Iraq are simply Iraqi nationalists. They are people that want us out of their countries, that don't want the U.S. occupying them. They have no connection to Al-Qaeda. Some of them can be ruthless, as people fighting for freedom for their country can be. But they're not so much anti-American as they're pro-Iraqi. And it's hard to imagine what we're fighting for, given that these people just want out of the country.
Yeah. You're reminding me now that you and I, long ago, early when this happened, had come to the conclusion that if it were the other way around, if it was our country being invaded by some foreign power, we would likely be looking to find a rifle to go try to run them off. And
heck, wasn't that what the American Revolution was all about? You know, it always strikes me that I hear, you know, George Bush say, these people are cowards. They won't fight us in, you know, an army formation with their tanks. They hide in the shadows and attack us from trees. And, you know, I'm a student of history, and I look at the American Revolution, and that exact same complaint was made, the British made that complaint about us. The Americans, they won't come out and fight our red coats in line formations. They're hiding in the trees, taking pot shots at us. They're not fighting fairly, the British said about the Americans. And we're saying the same. I think actually that these guerrilla tactics, and that's what they are commonplace for any group of people that's resisting occupation. And that doesn't mean that their cause is any more just than our cause. It's just a natural consequence of, you know, when you've got an occupying force and you have people that are trying to stop it, that's the way they do it.
Well, there's some things I think that we can objectively say, and that is that, one, Iraq has not invaded the United States. Two,
that is true.
The United States has invaded Iraq. And so
that is true.
Uh-huh. So that's in terms
that's
of...
That's an important distinction between that and Afghanistan, because I think that you can argue quite fairly that the Taliban regime, through its support of al-Qaeda, did invade the United States, which is why I've always supported our fight over there in Afghanistan and have always regretted the fact that we took so many troops from the fight in Afghanistan to fight in Iraq. But you're absolutely right about Iraq. It did not attack us. In fact, it was pretty well contained by sanctions, by the military flyovers. Saddam Hussein was a relatively toothless tiger. He wasn't completely inoffensive. But he was a far lesser danger than at least seven or eight other countries, including we see now Iran and North Korea. And heck, even Saudi Arabia, I think, in many ways, is more dangerous to Americans than Iraq was.
Yes. Well, I know we had debated for a long time, and it's hard to change people's minds on some things. But I have been attending any number of small 911 truth get-togethers around here, and I'm more convinced than ever that that was an inside job. Bin Laden had very little, if anything, to do with it. And if he had something to do with it, it was one more act of friendship between the Bin Ladens and the Bushes. He had no way in the world to keep our Air Force on the ground while that all craziness went on.
Well, Dave, as you know, I certainly value your right to speak your opinion, and I will never prevent you from doing that. You know I disagree with you on this, partly because of what I saw when I worked in Congress. I do think Bin Laden is and was behind the 9/11 attacks, and I also think that too many people saw – I mean, I understand that the various theories are complex, and some argue there were no planes, and some argue there were explosives in the World Trade Center. As far as I'm concerned, there were just too many witnesses who saw the planes, and I just don't believe most of those theories. But in my view, where we can come together on is we both agree that George Bush has done so many things, both incompetent and malevolent, that as far as I'm concerned, you don't need to argue he was behind 9/11 to point out that he's a very dangerous man and that he's taking America out of traditional American values like due process and not torturing and things like that.
I agree. But we have a truly, truly dreadful government in place right now, whether they were behind 9/11 or not. I do share that.
Dave, I appreciate your call. I always do. Call back again sometime.
Thank you, Mark.
Before we go to break, I want to read some comments on the blog. Folks, if you don't want to call in but you want to write in, you're always welcome to do so. You just go to RadioInsideScoop.com, go to the blog. As Dave pointed out, I don't stop anyone from posting comments except, you know, if you post spam, I delete it. But other than that, you can post what you want. And I have an interesting comment here by the Blues Lady, who is not too happy with what Nathan had to say when he called in earlier. And I quote, Blues Lady writes, quote, the caller said, so what, to the death of a couple thousand people possible in a future attack, intimating that more than that many died on the highways last week. Well, I would like to see how flippant he is about the lives of other people if his own loved ones were to die in an attack or on the highway. I think the man was rather cold-hearted, quite. Well, Blues Lady, I mean, I agree. I did tell Nathan I didn't agree with the way he was phrasing it because I felt that we have to be concerned about a terrorist attack. I mean, I worked on the committee overseeing the Department of Homeland Security. So I worked on trying to make us safer, whether from cargo in our ports or bombs on our planes or attacks on our nuclear chemical weapons. And I think that, and I don't apologize for it. I think that was a very important job to do. And so certainly I agree with you. We need to do our best to protect ourselves from terrorist attacks. Where Nathan and I agree is not that these attacks weren't important. I agree with you, Blue Lady. These attacks are important. We should do our best to stop them. Where Nathan and I agree, though, is that no matter the scope of these attacks, we shouldn't give up American values, American humane values. We shouldn't become like the enemy in order to fight the enemy, because if we do, then what are we fighting for? Toll-free number 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. I'll get right to your calls right after this break.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Bruce Birch radio program. Weekdays, 5 to 7 p.m. Connecting people.
Listen, not only we have the founding fathers and mothers, now we got the founding sisters. Don't forget about that.
It's Wicked Witch of the North, huh, Peter?
I'm the Wicked Witch of the South. Glad to meet you, buddy.
Well, listen, I sent you an email. You haven't replied.
Dude, I replied to your email. I told you that we wanted to have you in chat.
I can't do it. They won't let me in.
Oh, please.
Is this a good idea?
You're a real, both of you are a total cap.
Bruce, I love you more.
Uh-oh.
Oh, my God. I'm going to have to retreat to my Barbara Cartland novels and my box of bonbons.
Oh, God, the world's worst bitch fight on internet radio. This is great.
So, do I have to flip a coin or what's the deal here?
Don't miss Bruce Birch weekdays 5 to 7 p.m. on the Head On Radio Network.
There's a place where a total stranger will give their blood to save your life. There's a place where someone you never knew will save your child from drowning. A place where people will give you food and shelter after a flood. There's a place where, when you need it most, someone will reach out their hand, put it across your shoulder and say, "Everything's going to be okay." That place is called America, where we look out for each other. And it's up to us to keep it that way. When you help the American Red Cross, you help America. Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org today.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I was listening to that Red Cross commercial just before coming on the air. Did you realize that one of the bills that, in fact, John McCain wants would allow the Red Cross to visit our prisons, that before that, despite the fact that Geneva Conventions include Red Cross visits, despite the fact that even the Nazis allowed Red Cross visits. Now, what they did is they would go take them to Theresienstadt as the showcase concentration camp and treat prisoners nice in this small area while they were murdering them in the back. But at least, heck, they allowed the Red Cross in. Well, we have Don Rumsfeld did not want to let the Red Cross in. He actually hid prisoners from the Red Cross in clear violation of the Geneva Conventions on the ground that, well, he doesn't have to follow the law. He's above the law. Let's go to my next caller. It's Ray in Baton Rouge. Ray, welcome. First-time caller to the Inside Scoop. How are you, sir?
Am I on?
You are on the air.
Hi, Mark. How you doing? This is
I'm doing good. Baton Rouge is probably pretty overwhelmed right now. I understand your city's suffering a bit with a lot of New Orleans refugees.
A lot of growing pains, yes.
I'm sure it's not easy.
We call them victims. We know what happened.
Yeah, well, they are victims. They're very much victims. And are you native to Baton Rouge?
Yes, I am.
So you folks, I think, are victims, too, in that your city, you know, grew twice as large suddenly and, you know, wasn't prepared for it.
We had two hurricanes that hit us. We had Rita shortly after.
I'm sure it's not easy. So go ahead. What did you want to comment on?
Well, I was raised Roman Catholic down here in Baton Rouge, and I spent 3 years in the seminary. And, you know, the impression I got of Christianity was that Christ was teaching nonviolence. And, you know,
turn the other cheek.
Even the Jews had, nonviolence. I mean, you know, everything. He told his followers to love their enemies, to pray for their persecutors, and not to resist injury by turning the other cheek. Also,
right. Even pacifism, you could argue.
Pardon?
Even pacifism, you could argue. I mean, turn the other cheek. That's pretty strong.
That's pacifism, yes.
Right.
A friend of mine who I met a few years ago, he spoke at the Hiroshima Day service, was a Jesuit priest from Georgetown, Richard McSorley. He has a book called The New Testament Basis for Peacemaking. Great book. It was basically he had it printed himself, and it's out of publication now, and he passed away just after the war started. But he had been a POW in the Philippines during World War II, so he could speak from both sides.
So, Ray, what happened to Christianity?
Even in the Jewish history or the Old Testament history, the Jews would only go to war after the prophet gave them prescription. And, you know,
right.
The story of Jericho where they went around the city, you know, several times. That's not something that's normally a normal military operation. Also, there was a case where the Jews were told to capture their enemy, blindfold them, bring them into town, seat them at a table, feed them, and then let them go. And, you know, they became friends, basically.
So, Ray, tell me this. What happened to Christianity? I don't dispute any of the things you're quoting, but if you look at particularly the fundamentalist Christians, those that take the Bible literally, clearly a majority of them, support the Republican Party, support some of these harsh actions, support even torture. I mean, when you think about it, a person who accepts Jesus as their Savior supporting torture, I mean, you could almost imagine Jesus, striking them down, right? I mean, why is it that particularly evangelical Christians, now, don't get me wrong, I know there are liberal evangelical Christians out there. You don't have to write me to let me know this. I know that there, Jim Wallace and others, but why are the majority so supportive of some of these warlike tactics? Why do you think?
I can't tell you for sure. The only thing I can think of is that they read too much into Apocalypse or the Revelation. Jesus himself was teaching, was nonviolent his whole life until he died.
Right.
You know, the thing is,
he's nonviolent, right? I mean, he just took the injury and didn't fight back.
Christians were hijacked by Rome. The early church was all
right.
Nonviolent. The martyrs were nonviolent.
Right, that's all true.
Martin of Tours, whose anniversary or birthday was November 11th, was the basically he's the I understand he's the patron of soldiers, but he was also a pacifist. He says, "Look, I'm a soldier for Christ. I can't resist." They called him a coward, and immediately he said, "Okay, I'm going to go talk to the enemy, and he came back with terms of peace.
You know, it's interesting. Perhaps the only modern-day Christians then, by that standard, would be the Buddhists who refused to fight back, even when their country of Tibet was overtaken by the Chinese. But let me bring you up to the present day, because you're down in Baton Rouge.
Yes.
Louisiana is an interesting state. It's a very Catholic state. It is a red state, you could argue, because it supported Bush, but I know it also voted for Clinton in 96, so it's a bit of a swing state. You've got Democratic Senator Mary Landrieu. So why in Louisiana do you have these religious people? How come there aren't more people that see it the way you do, Ray? What do you think?
I really don't know. I've come to the belief that, like Gandhi said, the only people on earth who don't see Christ and his teaching as nonviolent are Christians. And the reason they don't is because they see that they think that his death was an act of sacrifice as to a pagan god. I don't know if Jesus was God. I don't think even the Pope knows if Jesus was God.
I think the Pope thinks Jesus was God.
Well, everybody that says they believe Jesus is God thinks he is God. That doesn't make it.
But you're saying no.
That doesn't make it so, right?
All right. I just wonder sort of who hijacked the church. And I'm not talking. I agree with you about Rome. I'm not going to dispute what you say about Rome. I agree with you. But I'm talking really in America in the last 50 years, 20. I mean, Ronald Reagan, who was not a very church-going man. I mean, here you have a born-again Christian, Jimmy Carter. Whatever you think of him as a president, I don't think anyone disputes that he was a firm-believing Christian, replaced by Ronald Reagan, who, whether you like Reagan or not, I think you have to agree that going to church and supporting Christianity was not exactly his first priority. And yet it was Ronald Reagan who brought the evangelicals from the Democratic Party into the Republican Party.
Ronald
and I've never quite understood how he did that.
He was in PR all of his life. You know, he was in
right.
the Army. He did propaganda films.
True, but he's also the first president ever to have been divorced, which, for an evangelical Christian, I mean, that Jesus made it very clear that he was against divorce. I mean, in the New Testament, that's, you know, let God has put together, let no man put asunder. It's pretty strong terms, and yet this divorcee who replaces this born-again Christian president gets the Christian vote, and I've never understood it.
It's charisma.
I guess.
Charisma doesn't necessarily mean it's good. It just means
I know down there in Louisiana, y'all have a real knowledge of charisma. You're the state of Huey Long.
Yeah.
So the kingfish, the ultimate American demagogue.
Well, yeah. That was before my time.
Well, I was before my time, too, but I know my history. So you got one more minute. Tell me what you want to say, Ray. Anything else?
Basically, that was it. I just wanted to jump in and say torture is wrong. You know, when you say do as I say and not as I do, you're torturing people.
Yeah. And, you know, I am not ashamed and am not embarrassed to hold my country to a higher standard.
Neither am I.
And the irony is that at this point, I've given up a higher standard. I want to hold at least us to the same standard as other civilized nations who followed the Geneva Convention. I'm not saying we should even be held to a higher standard than Canada and England and France and Italy and Germany. I'm just saying hold us to the same standard, not a lesser standard. And to the people who say, yeah, but Al-Qaeda tortures people, I say you're right, they do. And that's why I support the United States and not Al-Qaeda.
Yes.
Thanks so much for your call, Ray. I appreciate it. I hope you're calling again sometime.
Okay, Mark.
We're going to take a break. I know I've got a couple callers still on the line. Folks, there's still time, though, to call in. It's 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back with Cody right after this break.
the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights, meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
This is Bruce Birch, and I'd like to invite you to join me for a brand new show here on the Horn, the Bruce Birch Radio Program. Tune in Monday through Friday, 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Did you receive an email from the IRS saying you're due a tax refund? If so, don't open it. The IRS does not request personal information by email. Hi, I'm Russell George, Treasury Inspector General for Tax. The IRS and I want to warn you about bogus IRS emails and websites that look real, but are not. These emails are schemes played by crooks who are out to steal your money and identity. Fall victim to it, and you can spend months, even years, cleaning up the mess they've made of your good name and credit record. Help stop these crooks from ripping people off. If you get a suspicious email, forward it to phishing@irs.gov. That's phishing at irs.gov. Or call us at 1-800-366-4484. Again, that's 1-800-366-4484. Thank you.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. If you logged on and expected to hear Guy James, well, let me introduce myself. My name is Mark Levine. I also have a show on the Head On Radio Network that appears just before Guy James normally from 2 to 3 Eastern Time. I'm filling in for Guy because he's not available this week. But I hope if you like my show, you'll check out what I do normally from 2 to 3 p.m. I, of course, am a former congressional attorney, for those of you who don't know, and I give you the inside scoop from Washington, all the news the government does not want you to know. We've got a bunch of callers on the line. We've been talking about torture and American values. Cody, welcome to the inside scoop.
Yeah, hi, this is Cody, writing for powersandmorrison.com. Just wanted to address the issue that a local journalist out here in San Francisco, Josh Wolf, was put back into jail today for reporting the news. There's a war on journalism, as well as is probably something that is behind the United States Attorney's Office and this Attorney General, because are you familiar with this, Mark?
Why don't you tell our listeners about it? I know something about it, but I suspect you know more than I do. Go ahead, tell our listeners what happened.
Sure. We have I'm out here in San Francisco, and independent journalist and blogger Josh Wolf was covering a anti-G8 summit in July 8th of 2005, and part of his footage aired on all of our local TV affiliates, and what happened is the United States Attorney, in an effort to suppress dissent, has put an illegal subpoena on him, trying to take all of his video cameras, all of his recording devices, all of his tapes, his records, his papers, and he wouldn't cooperate with them. And they're investigating an alleged arson of a San Francisco city police vehicle, even though ABC 7 News, our local affiliate, has proved by showing screenshots of the police report that this vehicle was never burned, there's no arson, and that this United States attorney has pretty much made up a crime out of thin air in order to hold the journalist in civil contempt, and he's just not going for it. And he's got a lot of support. National Lawyers Guild supports him, Reporters Without Borders, the Society of Professional Journalists has made a $30,000 grant to his legal fund, and Judith Miller is going to be speaking. We're having a fundraiser tomorrow in San Francisco, and information is available at joshwolf.net. And she's going to be speaking, as well as the city supervisors, about this.
People can check it out there. Now, I have to admit, I'm of two minds about Judith Miller. I wasn't real pleased by a lot of what she wrote about in Iraq, because I felt she was someone who was allowing the administration to really use her. But that's about her. It's not about Josh Wolf. It's really very interesting. It's rare that they put people in the press in jail. I guess their argument is that he captured something on film that relates to the crime. Is that their argument?
That's what they're saying. But I mean, we have to keep in mind that first of all, this is the federal government intervening into a state's rights matter. The Attorney General of California, Bill Locklear, spoke out against this. The city supervisors in San Francisco has passed a resolution condemning it. They're trying to say that because San Francisco accepts money into their general fund from the federal government, that they paid in part some fraction of that police vehicle, and that gives them jurisdiction, even though the police vehicle was never damaged, according to the city documents, which were shown all over the local news. Your problem is getting some nationwide support for this, because they're starting with him. They tried to do it to Greg Palast of the BBC, if you recall recently. He was took some pictures of a little Guantanamo Bay-type camp that they have in Mississippi, about the FEMA camp, and they tried to charge him with anti-terrorism laws, and Amy Goodman, Democracy Now! Threw a fit, Randy Rhodes and Air America threw a fit, and they dropped the charges against them. And you read about this at GregPalast.com, and everybody knows who he is, but not everybody knows who Josh Wolf is, and that's why it's important to get some kind of outcry here. The thing is, today he just turned himself into jail half hour ago. He was out on bail. He was out on bail pending appeal, and the U.S. attorney put in a motion to take away his bail, revoked his bail, and the courts went along with this.
I tell you, it's a very scary thing when people start putting journalists in jail. I think it has to be saved for the most extreme situations, and you have to wonder what exactly he's up to. I mean, I think at the very least that the government should have to explain itself a little bit better when they put journalists in jail. It's a scary thing. You know, I'll tell you something. When I was working in Congress, I was about to get a security clearance, and I decided not to get it because I knew that if I got the security clearance, I was working on the Committee Overseeing Homeland Security, and then went into journalism, then they would argue that I was getting all kinds of classified information, and I do have people who do come to me as sources. But I get it as a journalist. I don't get it through classified information. And so I purposely chose not to get the clearance so I could come here and be a journalist. But thank you, Cody, for bringing that to our attention. I had heard something about it. The details are still, you know, kind of murky. But I think
right.
It's mostly murky because the government isn't telling us what's going on.
Right, and I've covered this issue as good as anybody on the net. I've worked really hard to keep it all concise and put it all together, and it's available. My name is Cody Mollica. The column's called Atypical Truths, and it's at powersandmorrison.com. People who are interested, go over there and just see an overview, see the truth, because the media is not portraying this correctly. You know, a lot of the murky details are that an officer was assaulted and that he's merely withholding this evidence, but that's not the point of the federal investigation. Just to be on topic, they're investigating, you know, they're nothing that had to do with an assaulted police officer, and that's according to their own documents, which I'm holding excerpts of the record in front of me, and hopefully, you know, some outcry will come out and something positive will happen in the courts.
Well, thanks for calling in, Cody. I do appreciate it. Let's go to Mike in California. Mike, welcome to the Inside Scoop. I have a feeling I know which Mike this is, a very long-time listener. Mike, you there? Let's see if we can get Mike on the air. If it's the Mike I think it is, it's someone who's been listening to the Inside Scoop for quite some time, but he's been holding on for so long that I'm not sure he's still there.
Hello. Mike. I'm here, Mark. Hello?
Oh, great. Yes, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Thanks, Mark. You know, I have a question that was dealt with in the San Francisco Bay Guardian a couple of years ago from Stephen T. Jones. If you can search this, called Artist General's Warning Recusal Question. It's a very simple question that goes to, the heart of our values as a nation in terms of military service and profiteering. It asks recusal for life from any profits traceable to any war on the watch of any member of any given war cabinet, notably the Bush war cabinet. So it's a very simple yes or no question, a kind of oath of martial office, if you will. And I just, it seems so bizarre that it hasn't been asked. I mean, if you remember in the debate.
I understand what you're asking for, Mike. You're asking for a bill that would prohibit anyone.
Much simpler than that, Mark. Not a bill, just simply a question for the media to ask, to be asked of every member of the Bush War Cabinet, would you agree to, on demand, to return any profit traceable to any war on your watch, any personal profit?
Oh, okay. Cheney has Wolfowitz, to give back
and then
the Halliburton stuff,
give
for example.
You give it to veteran benefits groups, college funds for children of the fallen. This is the most chicken-hawked war in U.S. history, the war in Iraq. And imagine Cheney or Wolfowitz or any of these people saying, no, I would not agree to that. Just imagine. The answer essentially has to be yes, I would agree to return any profits that are found to be connected to the war in Iraq or whatever war that I promoted as a public official. And
you know, Mike, it's a great question because it's been raised, I know, in Halliburton, for example. We have
so many
bid contracts that are going to Halliburton that are going to a company that Dick Cheney ran for so many years.
But
and there was a recent article in the Washington Post that described how it, hold on, let's just one at a time. I'll get back to you. But I just want to say that there was a recent article in the Washington Post that described how, in fact, loyalty to the Bush administration is what was determining who was in control in Iraq, in the Coalition Provisional Authority. It wasn't a question of how good you were at education or engineering to build a bridge or education to build schools. It all depended on whether you were loyal to the Bush administration.
Exactly.
So they would ask you, for example, what's your position on Roe v. Wade? And if you had the wrong position on abortion, you didn't get a job working in health care in Iraq. It made absolutely no sense.
Well,
so I think you're absolutely right, Mike. That's the kind of question that needs to be asked.
Well, this goes to a more personal point. If you the reason I referenced the portfolio question in the debate, if you remember when the question came up and Bush's nervous response was, anybody want some wood? It was a question in his portfolio of timber interests. So
the idea
would not be to pass a law. It's simply a question of honor, a measure of character. I'm in the war cabinet, and I'm asked, would I agree to a virtual potential financial sacrifice, say 10 years from now, Persian Gulf condos or something, I make $2 million. And I took this country to war. I never served. I mean, to make matters worse, I'm a chicken hawk. Do I have any moral entitlement to that? Well, of course not. There's people coming back in boxes and missing arms and legs and sanity. And then you got chicken hawks that are potentially, lined up for some gravy, some blood money. Now, that's not their motive, and they would say that. But at the same time, a formal declaration of disowning for life. If you serve in a war cabinet, whatever administration, but notably this one, if you take this nation to war, it's like, whoa, taking us to war, you forgot to recuse yourselves. That should be the colloquial concept, that you go to war, you're gonna agree, if bloggers find out 5 years from now after you've left the war cabinet that you connected with some deal and you're making money, you agree on demand to surrender that profit. And yes, you can fight it and disgrace your name, fighting over, blood money when you have no entitlement to it. So it's a rhetorical
first
question. I'm sorry.
And I agree with you, and I'll take it one better. I think I would support a law that says that you can't profit from any war you helped create.
Exactly.
That
but
simple.
The point is, we could ask it before the midterms, and it's a personal question. There would be no – Karl Rove couldn't manufacture an answer. It's like everybody would have to answer personally. It's, they could say no, or could they? Could you really say, no,
question.
I won't agree to that?
Well, email Tim Russert and meet the press and ask him to ask that question, because I think you're
imagine,
right. It's a very powerful question.
Imagine momentarily how nervous Bush was. I remember when he was asked about his portfolio and the timber interesting in the debates. Imagine
right.
that question being, Mr. President, would you agree to recuse yourself from any profit for the rest of your life traceable to any war on your watch? First of all, Bush, little is made of this. Bush is connected to his father through all kinds of defense industry stuff. And the estate tax, if that goes, has anybody done the math on this? Bush himself, personally, probably would pocket 30, 50, 60 million bucks if the estate tax is killed. Why doesn't anybody ever mention that? Because Poppy's fortune is estimated at, what, $500 million some years ago. God knows what it is now. A lot of it is connected to Carlyle Group. I mean, here you got Junior taking us to preemptive wars, and then,
Arabia is the one that bailed out his oil company, Arbusto, way back when he was failing in oil company after oil company. So you're absolutely right,
Everything
Mike, to make a really good point. I got to go to a break, though.
Okay,
so,
what about Raytheon, though? What about, let's have a death watch for RPGs now. From now on, who's killed by an RPG? And then, because the Israeli system will save lives, and yet that's a corporate cave-in to Raytheon. We know that already. I mean, it's an outrage. It's amazing.
It is an outrage, and you're absolutely right, and I appreciate your call. Folks,
you.
We got one more break to go. It is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back with the end of the Inside Scoop right after this.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 3/4. All you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
Head on Radio with Bob Kincaid.
When? Somebody tell me when the United States of America went from a can-do country to a can't-do country. Was can-do washed away in the fetid floods of Katrina? Was can-do killed in the stinking sands of Iraq? Did can-do get buried in the dank and gassy hole of Sago number 1? Where did the Bush administration go when they took can-do out and killed it? What happened to a nation that never said we can't? What happened to that nation that knew that the only thing it had to fear was fear itself?
Well, Mr. Kincaid, we've replaced that slogan. Now all we have is fear.
Head On with Bob Kincaid, 7 to 10 p.m. weeknights on the Head On Radio Network. Do you know what you
want? Has anyone ever said you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening.
Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Just a few minutes left in our marathon, 3 hours. I want to thank Guy James again for allowing me to fill in for him while he was away during the 2 hours of his show. If you haven't heard the entire show from the beginning, I want to encourage you to go to my website, radioinsidescoop.com, or go to whiterosesociety.org and listen to the archive when it's posted from the beginning. Because if you haven't heard the story of Maher Arar, the Canadian citizen who we sent to be tortured to Syria, who confessed under torture that he was an Al-Qaeda operative, but in fact he wasn't. He was completely innocent. If you don't know that story in its details, then you really need to download and listen to the beginning of the show. We just had Mike from California call on the line. I really appreciate the call, and I appreciate your passion, Mike. And I'm afraid it's just as bad as you think it is. Mike points out all the people in the Bush administration that have gotten profits from this war, and he says, why can't journalists ask members of the Bush administration, how much have you profited from the war, and are you willing to give up your profits from the war? It's a perfectly legitimate question, and I think it's a really good one to ask. And I hope Mike puts a lot of pressure on Tim Russert or Keith Olbermann or someone to ask our authorities that question. I'll tell you this. I'll do this for you, Mike. My next debate, I regularly debate Republicans on the air, and you can catch any of the my shows at radioinsidescoop.com. I list out what I'm going to do each week. I regularly debate Republicans, and I promise you this. Next time I debate a Republican, I will ask him that question, whether he thinks that people in the administration should give up profits made by war. Now, I'll tell you what his answer is going to be, I think. His answer is going to be, well, you know, it's kind of hard to say what's directly a profit from war. Halliburton, sure, gets money directly from the government, but are you going to argue that because oil prices go up and Condoleezza Rice has an interest in some oil company, that that's indirect, it'll be hard to define, and he'll give that kind of gobbledygook. But clearly with direct profits, Halliburton, all these no-bid contracts, it's very clear that people are profiting from the war. And usually you would think people in government would recuse themselves from ways in which they personally can profit. Unfortunately, it's actually as bad as Mike says, and in some ways worse. And I want to talk about in the last few minutes the article that was in the Washington Post. It was in the Washington Post Sunday, September 17th, and it's entitled Ties to GOP Trump Know-How Among Staff Sent to Rebuild Iraq. Apparently, the person who decided who got to go to Iraq in the early days under the Coalition Provisional Authority was a guy by the name of Jim O'Byrne. Now, you may have heard of his wife, Kate O'Byrne, who is a right-wing columnist for the National Review, the right-wing magazine formed by originally by William F. Buckley. Well, what he did is he decided that instead of seeing whether someone in healthcare was a doctor or had any knowledge of healthcare, or whether anyone in education knew anything about education, or whether anyone building bridges was an engineer, he felt the most important thing was their loyalty to the Bush administration. He would ask them, did you vote for George W. Bush in 2000? A very clear, direct question that normally you can't ask of civil servants because it's against the law. But apparently if you're hiring them for a temporary position, you can ask them. Heck, if the Democrats get in power, we'll want to close that loophole in the law. And he used that loophole to spend $18 billion on ideologues rather than the best people for Iraq. And so, for example, you had someone defend the flat tax, and instead of getting the tax system back up in Iraq, they wanted to do a flat tax, one of those conservative principles, and ruin the tax system. You had someone that didn't like one of the few things Saddam Hussein did right, which was national health care, providing health care to everyone free of charge, didn't like that. So what did the person do? They insisted that Iraqis pay for health care and thus caused more Iraqis to be isolated from the Iraqi government. And so it's very interesting if you read this article, and in fact I'll try to post it on the website when I get a chance, what exactly was going on here, because this is the thing that Mike's talking about. It's making profits, but it's even worse. It's using political ideology, and it's harming us. They felt that Iraq had too many government assets, so they started selling off government assets. They ended food rations. Now, many of you may think that all that sounds like socialism, and maybe it does. But you know what? It is not our responsibility when we conquer a country to recreate it in our image. It's one thing to help a country become a democracy. And listen, you know me, I don't even think we should have been in Iraq. But at least that, I think, is a legitimate goal. I don't think it should be done at the point of a sword or the point of a gun. I think we can do it by helping people who live there do it. But I don't think we have any role in saying you have to be capitalist instead of socialist and enforcing that at the point of a gun. Well, what did O'Byrne do? He got resumes from Republican congressmen, from conservative think tanks, from Republican activists, and he didn't care if they spoke Arabic. What he cared is if they worked for Catherine Harris in 2000. That's what he cared about. And so what happened is people who cared more about Bush 2004 re-election than about helping the Iraqi people were in charge, and you wonder why it is that things didn't go right. And the answer is, you had ideologues rather than competent people. And this, to me, is exactly what the administration is about. This is an administration that has always cared more about politics than policy, more about ideology than results. This is an administration that has always been about keeping itself in power rather than helping America succeed. And so, turning back to the topic we've talked about for the last 3 hours, when it comes to the question of torture, you have to ask yourself why the administration is doing it. Clearly, it's not for results, as we've learned. In fact, sometimes treating prisoners kindly gets better results. Other times, trickery does better results. The president hasn't given us a single example of where he tortured someone and got a good result. In fact, if anything, one of the people he'd be proud of torturing to get him to confess to be an al-Qaeda operative was Maher Arar, the Canadian we talked about in the first hour. The man, entirely innocent, who we sent to Syria to be tortured. So why is it that the administration wants to insist that evidence obtained by torture be admissible against these prisoners? In other words, we'd be able, according to Bush's new law that he wants to put across, to take Maher Arar and put him in prison because he confessed, quote unquote, to being an al-Qaeda operative under torture. Why does the administration want this if he knows, if Bush knows, or Cheney, whoever's controlling it, knows that this whole thing is probably false? And to answer that question, you have to go back to Mike's call. You have to go back to what we've learned in the Washington Post. It's all about politics, my friends. It's not about winning the war on terror. It's about seeming to win the war on terror. This is an administration that hasn't cared so much about accomplishing its mission so much as putting a sign up and portraying to the American citizens that its mission has been accomplished. It's all smoke and mirrors, my friends. Like the wizard in the Wizard of Oz, do not look at that man behind the curtain, because these techniques don't even work. So here we sacrifice American values. Talk about family values. To me, family values includes not torturing. Angelica from Germany points out an article on the blog in the Berlin's newspaper about the gay mayor who just got reelected by a large majority. And it's interesting that there are Americans that would say that, oh, he can't be mayor because he's gay, but someone who advocates torture, we're fine with. When will Americans realize that brutally torturing someone is a heck of a lot worse than being gay? In fact, there's nothing wrong with being gay. But what are our values these days? And I think if you understand that the administration's values are fear, promoting fear, encouraging Americans to vote on the basis of fear, then you can understand why they feel torture is so important. After all, as the House Majority Leader John Boehner put it, the Democrats care more about helping the terrorists than they do about helping Americans. You see, if you don't want to torture innocent people, you're helping the terrorists. And the Democrats, who don't want to torture innocent people, therefore, must be allies of al-Qaeda. When a political party in the United States claims that the other political party is in effect treasonous, you have to wonder, what their real agenda is. We have real treason going on, such as outing a CIA agent by members in the Bush administration. But to say that the Democratic Party supports terrorists, for shame, Republicans. Wake up, America, and wake up your friends, and let them know that torture is not an American value. This is Mark Levine filling in for Guy James and signing off. Check out the website, RadioInsideScoop.com, and check out my broadcast anytime, normally 2 to 3 Eastern times. Thank you, Guy James, for having me on the air, and I'm signing off.
Quality News Network. In Iraq, a top U.S. military spokesman says the number of attacks against American troops has increased. This follows al-Qaeda in Iraq's call earlier this month to target American forces. In Baghdad, the new judge in the Saddam Hussein genocide trial threw the former Iraqi leader out of court today after he protested the removal of the previous judge. Hussein's defense lawyers also walked out of court. The International Committee of the Red Cross will travel to Guantanamo Bay next week to visit the 14 prisoners recently transferred there from secret CIA prisons. At the Pentagon, NATO's top military commander in Afghanistan says the recent offensive named Operation Medusa killed at least 1,000 Taliban fighters. However, he says the drug trade is increasing and it funds the insurgency. At the United Nations General Assembly today, Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez called President Bush, quote, the devil, which drew some applause from the audience. Also in New York today, President Bush met with the Palestinian leader Mahmoud Abbas to discuss how to bring peace in the Middle East. On Capitol Hill today, Congress began debate on limited rather than comprehensive immigration legislation. The Senate is discussing the construction of a 700-mile fence along the border with Mexico, while members of the House are debating a requirement to show proof of citizenship prior to voting. In Thailand, the army commander who seized power yesterday received the endorsement of the country's king following the bloodless coup. He will act as the interim prime minister. He also pledges that elections will be held by next October. The overthrow of the Thai government is causing concern among officials of the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund, who have been meeting this week in Singapore. In Budapest, for the second night in a row, protesters clashed with police. The violence initially began after the prime minister admitted that he lied about the country's economy to win the election. In Japan, at the end of this month, U.S. Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson is making his first trip to China. Today, both countries set up high-level teams to hold future economic talks. You're listening to the Quality News Network. We have science and business news coming up next.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
In Washington today, a Senate panel approved President Bush's choice for Commissioner of the Food and Drug Administration. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention say that 131 people in 21 states have been sickened by E. coli bacteria linked to contaminated fresh spinach. The state of California is suing six car makers to hold them liable for their vehicle emissions and the damage these greenhouse gases cause the state. The French press reports that Airbus is expected to announce a six-month delay in the delivery of the A380, the new super jumbo jet. Boeing has been awarded a $2 billion federal contract to build high-tech equipment to combat illegal immigration along the U.S.-Mexican border. The Federal Reserve met today and decided to leave the key interest rate unchanged, which stands at 5.25%. George Lucas, the creator of Star Wars, has donated $175 million to USC, his alma mater. It is the largest donation in the school's history. Rupert Murdoch, the chairman of News Corp, plans to start a Chinese version of the MySpace popular social network website. And a federal agency says gasoline prices are expected to go down another 25 cents over the past 6 weeks. The average price of a gallon of unleaded gas has dropped to $2.25. Light sweet crude settled at $60.46 a barrel today, and near the close of Wall Street, the Dow is up 72 points, the Nasdaq up 30. There's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramoff.
Roll up your sleeves and put on your gloves, because the work is just beginning.
Monday warrior, me strike. Today's Tom Sawyer, me strike.
It's time to turn the conversation to taking back America. From the crusaders who have drained our treasury, created needless wars, and expect the working people to pay for their billionaires' games, it's time for the Bruce Birch Radio Program. Brought to you by the West Virginia Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They are building the American dream each and every day. You can get in on the program by dialing in to 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. And now, your host, Bruce